here. Yeah. Good evening. Good evening and welcome. This is the regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council. It's Tuesday, October 8th, 2019. We are at the Veterans Memorial Hall, 209 Surf Street in Morro Bay. It is 5:30 and a half p.m. and we do have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order and ask you in your own way to just honor this moment of silence. Thank you. Mr. Graham, would you lead us in the pledge this evening, sir?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, that brings us to Mayor and Council Member reports. I think this evening I'll start us off. Recently, the city clerk received a potential referendum that could repeal the pre-zoning ordinance that was passed a number of months ago by the council for the WRF treatment facility location. The ordinance and the repealing of said ordinance is an attempt basically to stop the building of the WRF project. Council, once they would receive this, and I need to let you know that the vetting process has not occurred to determine if all signatures are valid, would then be involved in making a decision to either repeal the ordinance or place it on an upcoming election. That's the process that would occur. A successful referendum will not stop the project. End of story. A successful referendum will not stop the WRF project. It's a narrowly focused referendum that basically would limit the city's ability to increase its sphere of influence to bring the property that we will be purchasing for the WRF into the city. The city can continue to build, whether it comes within the city's sphere of influence or whether we annex it or not. And so I felt it was important as mayor for me to share my position on this because I think it's important for the community to hear specifically what's going on. This city and the council majority on a number of occasions has reaffirmed its decision over the last 6-plus years to provide clean, safe, and affordable and reliable water to this community. The WRF project is critical or key to achieve this goal for now and for future generations. Significant processes have been undertaken over the last 6-plus years to develop this project, including the evaluation of 17 alternative sites, the hiring of not only a nationally known project management company, but internationally known project management company, full of experts in the area of water treatment facility development, water engineering, water reclamation, water funding, and on and on and on, and that is Corollo. Reclamation was added to this project to ensure that this city could provide drinking water and water for businesses to continue to operate in periods when there were droughts, which we know we've experienced and will occur in the future. An EIR has been completed. Mitigations have been added to ensure that we are protecting our ocean. And there's a lot of innuendo floating around out there that I believe personally is not factual, that says that the location of this site has the great potential to pollute our estuary. That's just not true, according to project experts that do water projects nationally and internationally. Blue Ribbon Committee was created by the city manager to review costs on a number of occasions. They met and have secured, we have secured, low-income funding, low-cost funding, which will reduce debt service, which is the majority of costs for the project, significantly. The rates that have been proposed through two 218 initiatives that were passed by this community, the voters have spoken numerous times on this project. The rates that were established are basically exactly the same as the rates that Cayucas ratepayers will be paying and below the rates that Los Osos ratepayers are paying at present. Loans and grants to reduce the cost of this project are in process and literally guaranteed for the future in order to keep costs down. From 2012 to 2018, there have been numerous elections where this project has been the number one issue that has been debated, and through each of those elections, the community has reaffirmed the fact that they're buying into the provision of clean, safe, reliable, cost-effective water for the future. This project reflects the community's desire to move away from the ocean, to protect us from tsunami zone inundation and potential flood zone issues in the future, and to protect neighborhoods as well as the estuary, as I have mentioned. I appreciate and thank the community for your understanding of the need for this project. I recognize the project impacts your and my home finances, but it's necessary to move this forward now to meet clean water regulations and keep the costs down for the community and to keep your end rates down. As your mayor, I will continue to provide you with truth, respect all voices, and implement the will of the vast majority of the voters of this community who have already spoken numerous times about this WRF project. This potential referendum by the organization CAL, or Citizens for Affordable Living, will not stop the project, but will create additional costs for the same project because the project location would be outside of the sphere of influence of the city and thusly would expose us to county costs for not only running an election on this referendum, but also costs associated with it not being within our sphere of influence. I believe their true purpose, however, is not to stop annexation. It is a bad faith, last-ditch effort to stop the project. This reflects a disturbing trend by CAL to delay the project and make it more expensive. Excessive public record requests are being received by the city, and I'm the first to tell you that PRAs, or public record requests, are important to honor, but we have been flooded with numerous massive public records requests that have tied up and are tying up staff and not allowing them to do the critical work that's necessary that needs to be done in this community. I will also tell you that misinformation on Prop 218 and diverting the project team from its focus in completing this project will cost you money. Members of CAL claim expertise in areas in which they have no expertise, We have hired Corollo Engineers, a nationally and internationally known project water management company, to advise us and to manage this project. And I believe because of the depth of the organization and the expertise that they provide, that we have the best that there is to offer. I will tell you that direct sabotage of our low-interest loans by this organization, trying to divert the focus away from our ability to receive these loans and advocate against them, will cost you huge dollars with regard to increased debt costs if this continues. Folks, I'm going to tell you that Cal is not working for you or to make this project more affordable. They are, in fact, pursuing a destructive path that will do what I believe, one, burden this community with higher water and sewer rates, put the city in peril of paying exorbitant fines up to $50,000 per month, and create and continue to create chaos and discord within this community. They have even talked and threatened the council with recall. So be it. That's always the will of the voters. But that's not going to stop us from moving forward, in my opinion, or the council majority from moving forward with regard to this project. From my vantage point, their goal, again, is to create fear and chaos. I do know that this is not what the majority of the community wants, and they've said that multiple times. Starting over is not an option. We are focused on solutions and will continue to move forward. We, I believe, will continue to maintain a steady focus on delivering this key project for you on time and on budget to minimize the rate impact to you, this community, and to provide you with clean, safe, reliable, long-term water in the future for many, many years to come. Thank you for your continued understanding for the need to make good on the promise that this council majority has made to you. Thank you. Those are my comments. Councilmember Heller.
I'd like to announce, I don't know if you know, but I belong to, or I've been appointed to represent the city at the Integrated Waste Management Authority, which is a countywide agency which oversees the trash hauling for the entire county. It's been an extremely interesting experience. And at our last meeting, the majority vote was to ban polystyrene and expanded polystyrene products in the entire county. I'm very happy to have supported that and voted for that. In Morro Bay, we banned it a number of years ago, but in the seven jurisdictions or eight jurisdictions in this waste management authority, not all of them had supported that position. So the county basically has said, we're going to at least do this for the entire county, and I think it's a really positive step. Those of you who are concerned about what we send to the landfills, plastics in the oceans, et cetera, this is the agency I'm asking you to get involved with. I'm asking you to support. I'm asking you to pay attention to. The next issue we're going to look at is what's known typically as SUDs, which is single-use disposable plastics, which is the plastic forks, et cetera, that you see in lots of restaurants. And I hope to continue to push to banning plastics in multiple uses, and I could use your support. On that. On another announcement, on the 19th, which is a week from Saturday at 2 o'clock, I will have my second radio show on 97.3, The Rock. I hope you do tune in. The first one I did a few weeks ago, and frankly, I struggled working the board, and it was pretty much a disaster, but I'm convinced this time it's going to be good. And the title of the show and the theme of the show is called Down Home Democracy and How It All Works. And if I paid attention to my history class, which I think I did, I was a pretty good student, democracy works on differences of opinion, on dissenting votes, majority rules, and the folks in this community that do not want the plant built where it's proposed, I support 100%, even if we are a minority opinion, and we do nothing but tell the truth as we know it, and I appreciate and would hope that you would respect those of us who hold that position. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Councilmember McPherson.
I do want to address your remarks, Mr. Mayor, but I first want to just remind everyone that tomorrow evening at the Community Center, we're going to have a public forum, Councilmember Heller and I, on short-term vacation rentals starting at 5:30. So we hope to see you out then. I do want to say that I fully support your remarks, Mr. Mayor. I'm glad you said them. I found it troubling, very troubling, that a minority would want to thwart the wishes of the majority of citizens in Morro Bay. And it is the majority because we've had five elections, a primary election in 2012, a general election in 2012, a general election in 2014, 16, and 18, and in all instances, three members of the council were elected, and they all supported this project, a minimum of three, the majority. And that was a strong voice from the public and the people that live in our community that they support the plan that we have been pursuing. We have worked hard to keep the cost down. The former mayor, Jamie Irons, survived a recall on this issue, so that was the sixth attempt or time when the public has had an opportunity to speak, and we've had two 218 processes which failed to receive the number of votes to overturn what we are doing. So I think everyone understands that we are working hard for the citizens of this community to provide exactly what we've promised we would, which is, as the mayor said, safe, clean drinking water and a new plant that meets current standards and at the lowest cost possible. And so I really find it troubling and disturbing that there are people that would actually try to sabotage our low-interest loans because they believe something different. And at some point, you have to go along with the majority. There'll be an election in 2020, and that's another opportunity if they still feel that way. So thank you. Thank you for speaking out. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I want to thank the mayor and Councilmember McPherson for their remarks, and I'd like to add my own thoughts. I'm struggling to understand why so many people are trying to get the city to change course and consider the Toro Valley site for the WRF. We investigated Toro Valley in 2017, and we found out that the cost both to build and to operate would be higher than South Bay. So it's hard for me to understand why a number of Morro Bay citizens continue to work against their interests and those of their neighbors. And I wonder what forces are driving this obsession to move the WRF and build it next to the Cayucas plant. I don't know if we'll ever know the answer to that question. Every attempt to delay this project adds to its cost and jeopardizes the two low-interest loans that we have obtained. The state revolving fund loan and grant can potentially reduce the monthly surcharge on our water and sewer bills by $8 to $10 per month. Council recently added low-income mobile home park and apartment residents to the utility discount program, which saves them a few dollars a month. But these savings are eroded with every effort to delay or derail the project. One of the community values that the city adopted in 2017 was, all aspects of the WRF project shall be completed, ensuring economic value with a special emphasis on minimizing ratepayer and city expense. I continue to commit myself to pursuing this goal, and I hope that my colleagues feel the same way. I will have office hours this Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. at Sun and Buns, and if you want to come down and talk to me about the WRF or anything else, I will be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Edis.
Yeah, I have three things, and one of them is a question that I'm hoping can be answered after my announcements. But for those of you that wanted to come to the town hall with Congressman Carbajal on Thursday, 6 p.m. at the Community Center, it is now sold out, so it was a free event, but you do need to reserve seats. So if you haven't reserved your seat, we are at max capacity. If you got a ticket or reserved a seat and you're not going to use it, please go online and return return that ticket so we can open up the seat for others. If you were thinking of coming and having a sign or some kind of poster that you could hold up, we'll be allowing that outside but not inside the venue. And that's really so that we can concentrate on keeping the town hall moving smoothly. And my question that I'm hoping can be answered after I finish my announcements is about the public safety power shutoffs. And there was a ton in the news today. I kind of woke up to a tweet from PG&E that said that they may be shutting off power to 800,000 residents across California. So of course we know there's a threat of fire, which, and so I'm just wondering if after my announcements the chief might be able to respond to what that means for Morro Bay and how we're conveying that information. But that really brings me to climate change and water. And so I want to thank the mayor and my colleagues on council for expressing their concerns about the water reclamation facility. I have a newsletter, and I just want to read you some text from my newsletter that will be coming out on Thursday. So what I am saying, and what I truly deeply believe, is that as our climate changes, one of our biggest needs is clean, secure water. And during Climate Action Week that just happened at the end of September, I recommitted myself to ensuring that Morro Bay moves forward with the water reclamation facility. And the reason that this has to happen is because we can create a cool climate and healthy communities if we act now. And we can do all of this while controlling costs. We really honestly cannot afford to wait on this project. We know that the water reclamation facility will provide a guaranteed source of clean, reclaimed, drinking grade water in Morro Bay for the first time ever, a secure source for the first time ever. We know the new plant is going to have less energy consumption than the current sewer plant. We know that the outfall will meet modern EPA standards, and we know that we can do all of this for just an additional $41 a month if we act now and keep the project moving forward now. So to the public, to those that are on TV, I hope that you'll come to public comment. I know that people are tired of the battle. I know that people think the project is moving forward and that there are no more barriers. I know that I have friends and neighbors that are absolutely surprised and frankly appalled that anybody would bring a referendum forward to try to slow the project down and to make the project more expensive for folks that have already said that we can't afford this. We have a council member up here who has said he's very concerned about cost for our residents and at the same time has said he supports slowing the project. So I just really urge the community to come forward and express your thinking around what it would mean for Morro Bay for the first time ever to have a clean, secure source of drinking water that we don't have to worry about as we're facing all of the things that we know are coming with climate change. And then finally, I just want to applaud staff for putting into place the utility discount program and making that a year-round program and extending that to the mobile home parks, and encourage folks watching, if you haven't, to please go to Morro Bay's website where you can sign up for that utility discount program.
Did you want to call on the chief with regard to the other?
I would love if the chief wouldn't mind talking to us about the news that was shared today. I saw many conflicting reports about how many people were going to be affected, where they were going to be affected, and then I'm very interested in also what Morro Bay might do if we receive some of these refugees of a power shutoff also.
Well, thank you, Councilman Anderson. Good evening. So right now, PG&E and Southern California Edison are in a monitor stage. Basically, they're monitoring the weather and seeing what's occurring. We are expecting Foehn winds, Santa Ana winds, in both Southern California and Northern California, which is rare. It is part of the climate change that's occurring in California. And they're expecting it to start on Wednesday morning. So there'll be probably tomorrow, identifying times that they will maybe shutting off power to over 800,000 people in the state of California. We're looking at 369 cities. 260 hospitals are going to be affected. 430 water and wastewater facilities are going to be affected in California. They're thinking that one event is going to occur through Saturday, possibly Sunday. It may take 1 or 2 days after that to get the power back on to some of the customers, both at PG&E and Southern California Edison. Our county is not affected. Some parts of Santa Barbara County are affected. Monterey and Kern County are affected. We don't have a plan at this time for any refugees, but if it turned out to be a multiple-day event, if we did get a request, all of our planning and requests will be going through San Luis Obispo County Office of Emergency Services. And they'll be coordinating with the Red Cross, come up with different care facilities throughout our county. During the Thomas Fire, we did open up our county on the public side and, correction, on the private side. And we did get some response coming to Morro Bay because of the air quality that was pretty poor down in Santa Barbara County. Next council meeting, we're going to be going over our plan, public safety power shutoff plan. It's going to be part of our emergency plan. And also on our city website, soon there'll be a website with a full page just dedicated to information and stuff that can be printed out to help our citizens out with any type of pre-plan they may have to have. This type of event will affect everyone, and we do have to be prepared. But I hate to say that we all have to be prepared as individuals and as individuals as families and neighbor helping neighbor. Sometimes also the best thing you may do is just find a neighbor outside the area too, or a friend or family that you can stay with. There's a this is led by PG&E. It's not led by government. That PG&E is given authority by the Public Utility Commission.
I noticed you had flyers at the back. Do you mind explaining to the public what was placed back there?
You bet. Those are flyers that to give suggestions on how to prepare yourself and your family. Also, different websites, Twitter pages. Also talks about signing up for reverse 911 through the sheriff's office. That can be used to notify. Probably the biggest thing to stay is just stay informed with what PG&E. The Public Emergency Services, we are not part of this process. We are respondents just like everyone else is. We're not part of the decision process like it would be for like a large fire in the area. We would be part of the decision process. All decisions are being made by Southern California Edison and PG&E through the authority of the Public Utility Commission.
And this isn't a plug for PG&E, but I did start following PG&E on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook so that I could stay aware of what is going on, and that's the only way I knew was from this morning, the tweet that they put out. So I appreciate that piece about keeping yourself informed.
Great, thank you. And thank you, Chief, for that update. I appreciate that. Mr. Collins.
Thank you. Councilmember McPherson, reminded the community that tomorrow both herself and Councilmember Heller will be hosting the vacation rental discussion, and that input will directly feed into the work of the Vacation Rental Community Committee that's being formed as we speak. Hopefully we'll be able to announce the roster of that committee by the end of this week or early next week, and they can begin work in earnest. Hopefully be able to provide recommendations to the Planning Commission before the end of the year, with Council taking action as early as January, potentially earlier. And just wanted to let the community know that we have engaged with Host Compliance, which does online auditing of vacation rental posts and connects that against what is permitted in our community in terms of the number of permits, so that we're able to take quick and swift enforcement action on those who are not permitted properly through the city. And that will begin probably the end of this month. Thank you.
And Mr. City Attorney, any closed session reports, sir?
No reports, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you for that. With that, we will move to presentations. This is a proclamation for Intimate Partner Violence Awareness Month, and I want to call to the podium and have counsel join me, Karen Borges and Gabrielle Rivera, if either of you are here. We'd love to meet you up front. Thank you for being here. This is a proclamation of the City Council, the City of Morro Bay, declaring October 2019 as Intimate Partner Violence Awareness Month. And I will read it to you. It says, whereas domestic violence is a systemic pattern of abusive behavior to gain power and control through use of physical violence, sexual violence, threats, and/or emotional abuse used by one intimate partner against another. And whereas every minute, this is an amazing statistic, every minute an average of 20 people are physically abused by intimate partners in the United States, which equates to over 10 million abuse victims annually. And whereas approximately 40% of California women experience physical intimate partner violence in their lifetimes, while one in three murder victims in the United States are killed by intimate partners, and whereas children exposed to intimate partner violence in the home experience long-term consequences such as difficulty in school, substance abuse, and serious adult health problems, and whereas Stand Strong provided a variety of prevention and direct services to intimate partner violence victims last year, including assisting over 820 clients, providing 2,864 nights of shelter to clients, and responding to 855 crisis calls. And whereas intimate partner violence has a significant economic impact, as it is estimated 8 million days of work are lost nationwide yearly as a result of intimate partner violence, whereas among families, intimate partner violence is the third leading cause of homelessness. Amazing statistic. Whereas we recognize the survivors and victims of intimate partner violence embody incredible strength and resilience to overcome trauma and abuse to build lives free of violence. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Morro Bay, Morro Bay City Council, designates October 2019 as Intimate Partner Violence Awareness Month and urges all citizens to observe this month by becoming aware of the tragedy of intimate partner violence, by supporting those who are working toward its end, and by participating in community awareness efforts. And signed and sealed by myself as mayor and the city. Thank you guys for the work that you do, and we'd love to have you, if you would, say a few words.
Thank you. My name is Gabrielle Rivera. I'm the Development and Communications Coordinator at Stand Strong. We are the domestic violence agency primarily serving San Luis Obispo, South County, and the coastal regions. And as you may know, we were formerly known as the Women's Shelter Program of SLO County. On behalf of the Board of Directors and the staff of Stand Strong, I'm grateful for your proclamation this evening recognizing October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month or Intimate Partner Violence Awareness Month. I'm proud to say that Stand Strong has been serving survivors of domestic violence, also called intimate partner violence, for the past 40 years. It all started right here in Morro Bay 40 years ago when two women decided to open their home to victims of domestic violence. In that time, our services have grown from a single safe house furnishing emergency shelter to also include a 24-hour crisis line, counseling for children, teens, and adults, including music and art therapy, legal representation, Latinx services, transitional housing, a child abuse treatment program, and therapy in local schools. In addition to helping survivors and their children who have been traumatized by this violence, I'm happy to tell you that today we are also now engaging in prevention work to stop the violence before it ever starts. We are working with middle and high school athletes in local schools in an evidence-based prevention program to help them serve as leaders modeling healthy relationships for their peers and the community. If you're wondering how you can help yourself and others, here are four ways. First, if someone tells you they are being hurt by their spouse, their partner, or their ex, believe them. It's so simple and the first step toward healing and safety. You'd be amazed how often people find the courage to speak up and then are either ignored or not believed. Second, make a phone call. 805-781-6400 is our 24/7 confidential crisis line. and we're here to help. Third, you can join us at our two big events this month. This Thursday, October 10th at 6 p.m. is our candlelight vigil in Mission Plaza. And this coming Monday, October 14th at 5 p.m., we have a very special reception and presentation by an award-winning national journalist, Melissa Gelson, followed by a panel including our very own district attorney. Last, you can donate your time, talent, and treasure. Support and funds are always needed. And our website has all this information at standstrongnow.org. And I'd like to close with a testimonial from one of our clients. When I made that fateful call to the crisis line, your staff reacted in the most compassionate way. I will be forever grateful to you for the encouragement you gave me to press forward with my life. This organization saved my life. I know that now. That's why we do the work we do. And thank you.
Thank you again. And with that, this evening, we do have a business spot. I'd like to welcome up Julie Phillips from Goan Coastal. Did I say that right, Julie? All right. Welcome. Love to hear about your new business.
Good evening, Mayor Heading and Council audience. My name is Julie Phillips. I just opened up a women's boutique here in Morro Bay. I relocated it from Los Osos. I opened in Los Osos in 2016, and I have a home here in Morro Bay, North Morro Bay. So we have women's clothing, we have accessories, we have shoes, and we also do direct-to-garment printing, and that's the laser printing on T-shirts. We do T-shirts and pants and stuff. So everybody's been so welcoming here so far, and we opened just the week, the end of August. We have our grand opening scheduled with the Chamber, October 22nd at 11 a.m., so we'd like to invite you all. We'll have some raffles and food. And prior to that, I ran a big box retail for 23 years and got tired of commuting, opened my boutique because that's what I always wanted to do, and here I am. So... any questions?
Just, did you give your phone number for the business?
805-439-4545.
And did I hear a website as well?
It's still in the works.
Okay.
It's going coastal. And our email address is goingcoastalmb1@gmail.com.
And location?
315. Yeah, 315 Morro Bay Boulevard. We moved into where Seashells and Sawdust was.
Great.
Right next to Megan's CBD and Grandma's.
Well, welcome to the community. Very glad to have you and appreciate you coming and letting us know about what's going on with your business.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good evening. So with that, I will move to general public comment. Members of the audience wishing to address any items on the agenda for which you can't stay or items not on the agenda can do so now. I'll start with the speaker slips that I have. First up is John Elliott. Welcome, John.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff. I'm John Elliott, and I'm here tonight to promote the Morro Bay Trick-or-Treat event. This will be the sixth annual Morro Bay Trick-or-Treat event. And we're going to follow pretty much the same format from last year. So the participating businesses in the downtown areas will be on a map for kids to trick-or-treat, and we will have a closed-off section for all businesses to participate in. With your business commitment to hand out a treat or offer something fun, such as a Halloween game, we will add your business to our trick-or-treat map free of charge. The event will take place on Halloween, October 31st, from 3 p.m. to 5:30, and we encourage you to decorate your business with fall or Halloween decor. The Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce and City of Morro Bay Recreation Services are supporting this event again this year, in addition to several of their businesses, organizations, and volunteers. We expect children K through 8th grade and younger, mostly with their parents, to participate. It's a great way to make kids feel good about your business and let parents see where your business is located, and know that you care about the community. If you want to be on the map, you can email info@morrochamber.org by October 15th with your business name, address, phone number, and contact name. The maps will be printed and handed out on Halloween starting at 3 p.m., and you can pick them up at 307 Morro Bay Boulevard starting about 3 p.m. on Halloween. And the kids will be given a goodie bag. Hope to see everyone there. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that. Next up for public comments is what looks like Bus Bats with Nancy Weber. Nancy, welcome.
Thank you for giving us this time to introduce ourselves. And it's Bus Butts.
So, yeah, I thought so, but I wasn't going to say
Butts.
It.
We lived in Europe for a number of years, or a period of time, and every city, town, and village had their bus transportation system not on the main drive coming into town. We have a lovely entrance to our town on Morro Bay Boulevard with our water feature on the rock, our this roundabout, and we come up over the hill, and we have this lovely little triangle park, and I don't want to see Bus Butts there. I don't think our visitors do. We are a town of visitors and a destination, and I think it's the wrong way to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up for public comment is Linda Winters. Linda, Mobile Home Linda, she likes to be called. Linda, welcome.
Good evening. I am Linda Winters, Mobile Home Park Linda. I'm sorry I missed the affordable housing presentation because when first I came to speak with all of you, that was the strongest point. Mobile Home Park Living is still one of the last bastions of affordable living, affordable housing, I should say. When I first started speaking to you, I quoted lots of statistics about people that live in mobile home parks. And throughout the state, there are 2 million people that live in mobile home parks. And their financial status and why their lifestyle is so affordable is very important to all of us. One of the things that we all have in common is we all own our own homes, but we have to rent the spaces that those homes are placed. So we're at the mercy of the mobile home park owners. We're generally from low to mid-level as far as income is concerned, and we are the workers, the families, the retired senior citizens that are on fixed incomes. But we love the places and we love the style of our living. We all know that our lifestyle is very unique and it is still affordable. And with housing, affordable housing being a prime topic on everyone's mind, we offer a simple solution. Keep mobile home parks from being swallowed up by large corporations that are money-oriented, not people-oriented. Take care of the people here in Morro Bay that have invested their monies in buying mobile homes, park models, RVs, the tiny little houses that are cropping up all over the place, and placing their homes on rented spaces and trusting the park owners to treat them fairly. We hope that our discussions have opened many people's minds to realize that the numbers of people, 1,000 of them here in Morro Bay, living and working here in mobile home parks, supporting local businesses. We love Morro Bay, even though we don't own brick and mortar dwellings. Thank you for including us in your conversations. Here are some of more eye-opening numbers that we have revealed. There are 15 mobile home parks here in Morro Bay. There are 400 mobile homes. There are 350 RVs, park models, and other types of recreational dwellings, and they house 1,000 people. That's compared to 36 units for affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Next up for public comment is Barbara Doerr. Barbara, welcome.
Barbara Doerr, good evening for the second time. First, I'd like to comment on agenda item C4. I watched the TBID. They do an outstanding job. But before you approve the 3% TOT on vacation rentals, I'd like you to consider using those funds for affordable housing. You can buy homes. You can do all sorts of things. I attended the 3:30 meeting today on housing element. And the citizens' right to public comment at the beginning of the meeting was prohibited by the mayor until after one scheduled agenda item was completed. It was only one item. It took 1 hour and 6 minutes, and one member of the public spoke. Even when I advised the council members of the omission, all council members sat silent. I was called out of order by the mayor when actually the mayor was out of order for not following the council-adopted order of business as adopted in the council policies and procedures. I appealed to the council, out of order again, to enforce the rules of procedure for council meetings and call the mayor out of order, but they all sat silent. The council's P&P enabled the council to enforce their own rules. Public comment at the beginning of the meeting. Support your residents, the citizens who want to say something in a small amount of time. Section 137, motion to enforce the order of the agenda or a change in order of agenda. The P&P state, if the presiding officer fails to enforce the rules of order and decorum set forth in sections 132 to 137, then any member of the council may move to require the presiding officer to do so, and an affirmative vote of the city council shall require the presiding officer to do so. Thank you, Marlise, for trying to bring forth the study I requested. It wasn't quite the way it was meant to be, but thank you anyhow. I would really hope that this city council, often when things are done that for the public don't seem appropriate, you all sit there, the council members, sit there and allow the mayor to do certain things. You each represent us. You're our council members. And you don't have to always agree with the mayor. I feel like maybe your Republicans up there who won't do anything against Trump. It's really pretty sad. And I really hope you all represent us. And I did send an email in June 2nd of 2016 to Scott. And I'd like about the housing element and how there's a lack of compliance. Internal compliance with the general plan and compliance with the general, between the housing element and other elements of the general plan. Internal compliance is not there. I'd like that to be incorporated into the record for the housing element that was held tonight. I tried to come early, but I was not allowed to talk.
Thank you, Barbara.
But I won't be out of order now, but I think you were, Mayor Hedden.
Next to public comment is Patricia Newton. Welcome, Patricia.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council, City Staff. Thank you for having me today. I am Patricia Newton. I'm the president of Morro Bay Art Association. And we've been quite involved with Public Works Department here in Morro Bay and the city manager to help bring about a bus stop the new RTA bus stop in the park that will work for everybody involved. We felt like coming through a roundabout over a rise to the main street would be a hazardous place to put a bus stop for children, adults, people who are loading, unloading, etc., including ADA individuals. Making people stop there on that main street would be also hazardous because it could back up, the people who are having to stop 50 feet back of a school bus. However, Public Works Department have been wonderful, Janine Burlingame and Mr. Collins, to help bring about something that makes sense, keeping it on Harbor Street and rebuilding, making it larger, making it better for ADA issues, and allowing us to keep Art in the Park, which, by the way, is going on 65 years this coming year. So I'd like to thank you. We support the Public Works Department recommendation for the RTA bus stop. Thank you again.
Great. Thank you, Patricia. Next up for public comment is John Weiss. John, welcome.
Thank you. Dear council members and citizens here and watching at home, I wish our conversation was about public safety, street repairs, and repairing leaky pipes, which are dumping raw sewage into our water wells. Oh, my goodness. Can't believe that. My apology. And still no results. However, the largest project in our city's history looms to impact every business and home in town with excessive water and sewer rates needlessly. There are better alternatives that are less impactful on our environment and our economy. So I'm concerned about many items about the proposed water reclamation project. Here are just a few. The misconception that the proposed location is a done deal and that there is nothing that the citizens of our community can do about it. That it will raise our project costs if delayed. That there are no less expensive options that the water board will support. I'm really here as a Quintana Road business owner and as a consumer of the businesses along the busiest business sector in town. As of last week, the pipeline plan, as I understand it, is only 60% complete. There have been no traffic studies. We don't yet have permission to pipe through the PG&E property to Quintana Road, and I understand we do not have permission to run pipes under the overpass at South Bay from Caltrans. The route proposed will be devastating to the businesses and the employees, city sales tax revenue, and inconvenient for our citizens. Just stand at Quintana and Kennedy Road in the afternoon. Is anyone listening? On that note, I urge the council not to buy property for the site until after the outcome of the referendum on the site location is settled. Have a good meeting.
Thank you, John. Public comment is still open for any items on the agenda for which you can't stay or other items. Welcome, Betty.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz. I want to cover a couple of topics. First of all, I want to announce that the El Choro Regional Dog Park is having its annual celebration this coming Saturday from 10 to 2 at the El Choro Regional Dog Park across the street from Cuesta College. If there are dog lovers listening and would like to bring your pup out, do some dog paws in the cement or have them just play. There's lots of things going on. It'll be a festive time. The second thing I want to address is a comment that was made last week by the mayor saying that there had been many hearings on the wastewater treatment plant in reference to a comment that I made. And I think it's sad that either the staff has not educated the council or the council doesn't seem to absorb the definition of a hearing. A hearing is a legal term, and it has to be done with a public hearing under an item B, and this council has not done that on the wastewater treatment plant. It did that for the EIR, for the first part of the EIR, but it's never had a public hearing per se. So I'm hoping that our language can get more accurate. The third thing and the last thing I want to comment on was addressed in the mayor's comments earlier. And I'm glad that he did that, because when Mr. Collins, our city manager, spoke to the paper and to the KSBY and made the comment that we're going forward regardless, I had to take note, because I did not know that the council had made comment on that. And for him to speak on your behalf, I thought was out of order. Or you had had a closed session and told him to say that, and that would have been out of order. So I'm glad to hear that you each expressed your own opinions today. I do want to comment on a couple of items that were said. One is that the idea that we've had so many elections on this particular item, I don't believe is true, because this particular project did not come forward until 2015. So any election before that did not address this issue. In addition, the recall was not about this issue. It was about the firing of some appointed officials. So that's not true either. I also want to comment on the idea that it's the minority that it's bringing forward this referendum and other ideas regarding to the WRF. Until you have the election, until you hold the referendum, you do not know that it's a minority. You don't know that it's not the majority that's going to be in favor of the referendum. I would also like to say that if you were sincere about getting costs done, then when the peer review got together and their primary or one of their main points was the major cost of this WRF is the site, and you chose not to address that and
thank you, Betty.
Let it stay where it was, then that wasn't addressing the cost.
Thank you. Public comment is still open for any items on the agenda for which you can't stay or other items. Welcome, Mr. Lee.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Member, City Staff. My name is Lee Johnson. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. My public comment tonight is in regard to the possible referendum on the annexation of the property for the water reclamation facility on the South Bay site. I'd like to thank Council Members Addis, Davis, and McPherson, and Mayor Heading for following the will of the voters of Morro Bay by moving the WRF project forward as quickly and efficiently as possible on the South Bay site. This ensures our city will have modern and reliable infrastructure as well as a future source of fresh water. Thank you for staying strong and doing the work that the majority of voters elected you to do. I'd also like to thank the public works staff who have worked incredibly hard to keep our current aging wastewater treatment plant operational in spite of the delays encountered in the political process. Thank you for continuing to do your job to the benefit of all of us. You're not thanked nearly enough. As far as the referendum, this is another disingenuous move by a small and bitter minority to disrupt the process for political and personal gain. Their information is factually incorrect, and their intentions are against the best interests of the entire community, especially against our children and future generations. This referendum will not stop the project, and it will not lower the cost to the residents. In fact, it will do exactly the opposite. It will increase the initial and ongoing cost of the project, put us in a long-term potential disadvantage to the whims of the county, and most importantly, it can increase the construction and development costs. To be clear, voters of Morro Bay have consistently supported moving forward with a WRF project that disentangles the city from a dysfunctional partnership with the Cayucas Sanitary District, moves the project away from the coast to both reduce risk from sea level rise as well as create new opportunities for recreation and economic development, and provides clean, recycled water that will move Morro Bay toward a sustainable water future. The voters have spoken in 2012, 2014, 2016, 2018, as well as several special elections, 218s, etc., to keep this project moving forward by voting for candidates who support the WRF. The community wants the WRF project to move forward. This referendum is a waste of time, a waste of energy, and a waste of money. It is being led by a small group of people who do not have the best interests of this community at heart and who are willing to make the rest of us pay for their political and personal agendas. I appreciate the ability of the City Council and city staff to stay focused and keep working toward the project that the people have said they support over and over and over again. I would also suggest that if there is a process for some of the people who have been lied to at Spencer's and Albertsons and other places to remove their name from that, from those signatures, when they find out the real facts, that process should be communicated to the community so they can do so. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Public comment is still open for any members of the public wishing to come forward on items on the agenda for which you can't stay or other items. Welcome, Bob.
Mayor, council members, staff, Morro Bay citizens. I didn't bring any notes tonight, so I support Mr. Johnson's remarks and comments. He said it right on. We've been working on this for many, many years. We have a timeline to meet, a deadline to meet. And if we don't meet them, we're going to be fined. We're going to have many more problems than you can imagine. All I can say is that we have to move on because we can't waste more time, because I always said it before, time is money. And if we don't move on, I support the council. They've been elected to do this, and I thank them. I know they got a tough job and have to make tough decisions, and I give them a lot of respect. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Public comment still open for items for which you can't stay that are on the agenda or items not on the agenda. Good to see you, ma'am.
Good evening, Mayor Heading and fellow council members and staff, city staff. My name is Jen Ford. I'm a resident here in Morro Bay. Just like Bob said, I didn't come with a prepared speech, so it won't be nearly as eloquent as Lee Johnson's. But I do want to basically echo what he said. I believe in what is happening so far with our... Sorry. I'm very passionate about
this.
Now
we can see you.
I don't know where I was at. But anyway, I just want to say that I hope that you continue moving forward on the direction that you're going and staying on track with the wastewater treatment facility. As a mom of two kids who will, I hope, reside here in the future, I hope that there is secured clean water for them that is affordable. And I know that if we don't do this in a timely manner, what happens? We get fined. We get fined so much money, it's ridiculous. And I know that there are some people here that have, you know, in their heart they believe that that there's other opportunities, there's other things to do. But the reality is the work has been done. The work has been done by experts. It's been done by our council, who's put in, I don't know how many hours you've put into this. I can't imagine. I thank you for that. And I trust you. I worked on your campaigns. I voted for you, and I put all my trust in you that you're going to do the right thing and that you're taking us in the right direction. So I'd like to address those who are listening tonight, either here or at home. I want to encourage you not to be misdirected when you hear these scare tactics that are being said. And I hope that you are able to make a clear-headed decision and use your common sense. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jen. Public comment is still open for items on the agenda for which you can't stay and or other items. Welcome, Nicole.
Good evening, everyone, council, mayor, and staff, and everybody in the audience here and at home. And I do not have any prepared notes either, and I'll speak very briefly. I also am up here tonight to support you in what you're doing to move the water reclamation facility project forward. Other people have spoken to how many years and how much effort and how much time this council and previous councils have put into this project. And like Jen Ford said, I also trust you. I voted for you. I've worked on your campaigns, and I trust that that you're doing the right thing. I urge you to not get distracted with all these other things going on, because that's easy to do, and to move forward in the best way that you know how, that your experts have said and that the studies have said. Anyway, stay the course. That's my message. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Public comment is still open for items either on the agenda for which you can't stay or any other items. Welcome, Linda.
Good evening. Good evening, Mayor. Thank you. Thank you for your comments at the beginning of the meeting. My name is Linda Merrill, and I'm a 35-year resident of Morro Bay. I urge you to continue your support for this proposed WRF sewer project. I'm at a loss to understand why anyone with any sense at all would be doing this referendum. It is just so against everything that we need in this city. My neighbors say, just get this done. You know, let's get this over with and move on in our lives and continue doing the things that are important to us. We can't spend our whole lives just worrying about this sewer. And so my neighbors support you. They sent me to tell you that they want this sewer to continue. Please, do not waver in this. Whatever you need to do, remember we're behind you 100%, and I really appreciate this, and so have a good evening. And thanks for the wonderful chairs. They are really terrific. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Public comment is still open for any items on the agenda for which you can't stay or other items. Surveying the room, seeing none, I will close general public comment. Bring it back to council. Not a lot, I believe, to answer. I will ask our city attorney if there may be some confusion, especially in members of the audience that didn't get this whole issue with regard to what I spoke about and the referendum. And could you outline specifically what we've received, what the test is for a validation, and then what the referendum specifically speaks to and what the outcome would mean with regard to the WRF project. Thank you.
Sure, Mr. Mayor. So a referendum petition was filed with the city clerk. Under state law, there needs to be 10% of the signatures that are registered voters in the city that would be verified, which is being done right now. It was accepted because it passed what's called a prima facie check, which means that just looking at it, you can see that there's signatures of 10% or more of the registered voters, but those signatures now have to be verified on voter registration cards. The city has up to 30 business days to do that. What the referendum's intent is to repeal ordinance number 623, which is pre-zoning for the South Bay site, for the wharf site. If that pre-zoning is repealed, LAFCO has said that they weren't willing, I believe at this point, to move forward without a pre-zoning ordinance. But under the government code, under state law, it's crystal clear that a city can purchase land outside of its borders for public purpose. So what would happen if the pre-zoning ordinance was actually to be repealed due to the referendum would have no impact on the wharf plant because we don't need to annex that land into the city in the first place. As for existing zoning, the county has already issued a report that the zoning for that land is consistent with building the wharf plant. So essentially, the land just wouldn't be annexed into the city for up to a year if LAFCO would not move forward without the pre-zoning annexation ordinance. But it has no effect, whether the referendum passes or not, on the ability of the city to construct the wharf plant where it's planning on constructing it.
Thank you. And just to clarify again, a comment that was made with regard to a comment I made at the last meeting, and that was that we have had many public hearings. Could you just comment on the appropriateness of those public hearings with regard to the WRF project, and indeed if we have complied with the law?
Yes, so public hearings sometimes are required by state law for certain actions taken by a city council and other legislative bodies. There have been public hearings as required by law for the Prop 218 process. There have been public hearings for the CEQA review the council did for the EIR. Those were the public hearings required by law, and the council held those. So every public hearing that's been legally required for the city council to hold for the wharf project has actually been held.
Okay, thank you for that. And I don't have any other comments to respond to. Yes, Councilor Raddus, yes.
Yeah, could you clarify if there's a nexus between TOT and affordable housing? I think I heard public comment about why don't you use the 3% TOT and do something with affordable housing, and I didn't think the money could be used I didn't think TOT could be used for affordable housing.
It cannot be used for, that's TBID money, it's for marketing only based on how the TBID has been set up.
And so bringing the VRs in and taxing them, we can't then use that money to build or to promote affordable housing. It's
That's
solely
correct.
For promotion.
It's
of
for
those.
Promotion. It's for tourism basis only. I wanted to add one thing, Mayor. There was a consolidated permit through a public hearing at the Coastal Commission locally here. And also one statement was made that the city manager spoke out of turn. Well, the city council has taken numerous stands on this project, just like you have on other issues. And as a spokesperson for the city, when asked questions about what the city's doing, I tend to reflect the majority council. And when they've taken stands on policy issues like this one, I felt comfortable making those remarks. Thank you.
And you can validate that no secret closed hearing or public closed session was held with regard to that issue as well. I'm sure you'll validate that.
That's correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
I have a question regarding a public comment that was,
sorry,
that was made.
Yeah, sure.
When the constituent came up, Barbara Dorn, in the previous session, and public comment here, was she out of order in needing or wanting to talk, or was the council correct, and was the mayor correct in not recognizing letting her talk? Could you clarify that?
The public has the right under state law, of course, to make public comment when there's an agendized council meeting. The government code says that it must occur either before or during the item. My understanding is that when the public comment was moved into the middle of the item after staff report, that's entirely consistent with the government code. So Morro Bay actually goes above and beyond legal requirements for public comment, as a side note, generally allowing public comment specifically the beginning of the meeting in general and then also before each item. Many cities just have one public comment period at the beginning and don't do a public comment before each item. So the city goes above and beyond legal requirements in general for public comment.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Councilmember Davis.
Yes, thanks. Chris, I'd like to follow up on what I think I heard you say about the annexation. You said that the city can purchase without annexation and then would have to wait a year before annexation. Did I hear you say something like that?
Yes, in the sense that referendum, it's a right of the voters to put forth if it actually they get 10% of the votes, they get 10% of the registered signers, registered voters sign a referendum petition. If it's validated, then that action comes to the council, and the council has two options. They either repeal the ordinance or they send it to the voters. If the voters then repeal the ordinance, then council can't take action on that ordinance for 1 year. So if the referendum were to go to a vote and the voters approved the referendum, then council simply could not pass the pre-zoning ordinance for 1 year. 1 year, 1 day later, council could pass the exact same ordinance, and that would be what the law provides for. So this could set back pre-annexation by a year from either repeal by council action or the voters repealing it. But then the ordinance could be passed in the future.
Thank you. But then the project still could continue to move forward, just as you've...
Yes. To be clear, the city council could have not asked LAFCO to consider annexation of this county land. The city could build this plant, and it may build this plant on county land. The city does not need to annex the property to build the wharf. To be crystal clear, Government Code 37351 provides in part, quote, "A legislative body may purchase real estate situated outside the city limits as is necessary or proper for municipal purposes. It may control, dispose of, and convey such property for the benefit of the city." So whether or not this land is annexed, the city can build the water plant there.
Great. Thank you.
And could I just follow up
sure.
on one
sure.
additional point? It is correct that the county has already approved a consolidated permit for us to build there. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Great, thank you. You may.
Can we just repeat how much more it would cost, or we're at risk of losing loans if the referendum were to pass? What's the financial issues with that?
In regards to whether or not we'd have increased property taxes, I believe the finance director has been looking into that. I don't know if she has the exact numbers ready for tonight's meeting. We talked about that this afternoon.
I did speak to the county. They needed some more information than I had at the time, but they estimated not more than 1.1% of the assessed value. So that will change, obviously, as we do our build-out on the site.
Not more than 1.1% of the assessed value.
Right. The assessed value currently is $1 million, and that's our public works director.
Thank you. Okay.
$1 million for the entire property, for the 27 acres we're proposing to purchase. It's somewhere around $300,000 currently.
Okay, thank you.
Since we're talking about cost, what is the cost to put something on the ballot? I know there's a cost to put any kind of an item on the ballot. So assuming it's not a special election, but rather putting it on a March ballot, mm-hmm. What does that cost?
We anticipate $15,000 to $30,000 for a March ballot, and if it was a special, it would be much more, and if it was the November, it would be kind of negligible. And the county staff have also told us that as they get calls from community members who are pushing supporting the referendum, that they bill us for the hours of responding to their inquiries. So it probably won't be much more than that, the 15 to 30, maybe a little bit more depending.
That's all assessed to the water fund. Is that correct?
I think that would be a choice of the council.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you. With that, we'll move to consent agenda. I'll open a public comment. Any members of the public wishing to speak on any consent item? Public comment is open. I have no speaker slips. Seeing none, this is for the consent agenda. Going once, twice. And I will close public comment for consent. Bring it back to council. Any items to pull?
Like to pull item 6, A6.
A6. Any others?
Which one's that?
Seeing none, I will entertain a motion for approval of A1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
I so move.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Davis to approve everything but A6. Second by Councilmember McPherson. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
And Councilmember Heller, A6, sir.
A6. So, oversight committees, the citizen oversight committee, I believe the policies are being reviewed for these, and I'm not sure who's reviewing it.
Myself and Councilmember McPherson are the
thank
subcommittee.
You. So, the question I have is, we have a lot of very important things to handle here in the council. Are you looking at this specific policy that request for missing a meeting has to come to the council level? It seems kind of like asking for a hall pass in middle school. I mean, these are volunteers who are spending their time, who are committed to the oversight committee. Is this really something that needs to be brought up to the council?
It's a current policy.
Oh, is that being looked at and reviewed? It's possibly not
yes.
making it a current policy
yes.
because
I don't know what the outcome will be because that would be a council decision, but we're looking at a rewrite of that area.
Okay, so yeah. it seems like it should probably be handled at a lower level, in my opinion. So.
Thank you. Did you – any other questions on that one? Do you want to move approval of that? Or? Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Commotion?
Yes, please.
I'd like to move that we approve consent item A6.
I'll second.
I got a second.
My Councilmember Heller to approve agenda item A6, second by Councilmember Addis, and we'll do a roll call vote.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. And with that, I need to get to the front page on my agenda. My apologies for one moment. With council concurrence, we have members from SoCal here tonight that need to be at the Atascadero City Council meeting tonight as well, not being able to duplicate themselves, obviously. With your permission, I would like to move item number C3 to the first agenda item for business and then just let the others follow that. Would that be okay with everybody?
It's fine.
See heads moving? Okay. With that, we will move item C3, and that will be our consideration. This is consideration of Visit San Luis Obispo County Tourism Marketing District renewal with recommendation, and I will turn it over to our city manager and tourism manager. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Council. So the recommendation before you is to adopt Resolution 8419, which grants the consent to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supes to renew the slow TMD for lodging establishments in Morro Bay for a 10-year period with a 1.5 assessment, and authorize the mayor to send an accompanying letter to the county and Visit SoCal boards making recommendations for improving collaborative performance going forward. We have Chuck Davison, CEO from Visit SoCal, here who will be presenting the item and a presentation. We'll be able to answer any questions. Of course, your staff is able to answer questions if you'd like to direct those to us as well. So I'd like to bring up Chuck to provide about a 15 to 20 minute presentation, and he can answer any questions you have about SoCal, what their future looks like, and how we kind of coordinate locally with them.
Welcome, Chuck. Great to see you again, and let you take it away. I know you need to get going, so it's all yours.
Great. Good evening, Mayor Heading, Council Members, City Staff. I'm Chuck Davison, the President and CEO of Visit SoCal. Thank you for the opportunity to present on this important initiative tonight, and we appreciate you not only making time for the discussion, but also adjusting the agenda for us. From there. So when we were in front of this council almost 5 years ago, we concepted what the success of a tourism marketing district might look like. Today we stand in front of you with proven results from those efforts. As the number two economic driver in the county, tourism has a strong role to play, not only in economic health, but the vitality of our communities. Tourism now makes up 9.7% of the countywide GDP, compared to 2.5% at the state level. And we really consider tourism as the first gate to economic development, talent attraction, and business investment, because people don't come to a destination to do business that they already haven't visited. So you see on this slide, when you build a place that people want to visit, you'll build a place where people want to live. And when you build a place where people want to live, you'll build a place where people want to work. And when you build a place where people want to work, you'll build a place where business has to be. And so everything starts ultimately with the visit. Equally, the tourism ecosystem, it's really important for us to understand that our greatest opportunities are to work under the funnel of business that exists above us. Each layer of the tourism ecosystem works on behalf of the areas below. Brand USA is driving travelers here to the United States. Visit California at the state level is trying to capture not only those international travelers, but also domestic travelers from the other 49 United States. And then a regional destination marketing organization like Visit SoCal is working to drive demand for our local communities like Morro Bay and local DMOs like the Morro Bay TBID, all the way down to our consumer interaction at the local business level. And those higher up the funnel are doing for us what we simply can't do for ourselves. Visit SoCal's role is really to create awareness and drive demand, providing opportunities for Morro Bay to participate in those programs and services that you can't create on your own. And just a few quick highlights. Through our partnerships higher up the funnel, we've been able to bring worldwide exposure to Morro Bay. You're aware of the filming of Visit California's domestic and international TV spot that took place here just a couple years ago, featuring the Morro Rock. We've placed three Amgen Tour of Californias into your community, giving you worldwide exposure on NBC Sports, both domestically and internationally, along with the Highway 1 Dream Drive event, which was concepted by your own Jennifer Little, head of the Morro Bay T-Bid, and then developed and delivered by Visit SoCal in partnership with Visit California, exposing Morro Bay to the world. Since the establishment of the TMD, we have a number of key accomplishments included in your board packet. Was a overview of the last couple years, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I do want to highlight a couple key initiatives. Over these last few years, we spent $3.3 million in advertising. Our advertising budget this year is $1.2 million in seven key markets, and that number actually grew just a couple weeks ago when our board approved an additional $400,000 in advertising spend with our recent announcement of San Diego and Portland and those new flights, expanding us to nine key feeder markets. We also grew exposure by developing our outer market in-person relationships with almost 2,000 media and trade partners. And in media and travel trade alone, we've expanded our share of the destination, bringing almost 500 representatives to the destination over the last couple years. That's one representative every 2.3 days to help showcase Morro Bay again to the world. Over the past few months alone, we've hosted three different groups totaling more than 100 attendees showcasing the destination, including this weekend showcasing the Harbor Festival to an out-of-town group that we brought into the market. Again, opportunities that would not exist without the work that Visit SoCal does. In addition to that, you're all aware of the reactivation campaign that took place around the reopening of Highway 1. In addition to the work that we did when Highway 1 was closed with providing reroute maps everywhere from Monterey all the way to LA in six different languages, making sure that people knew the destination was still open for business. In that Highway 1 Dream Drive experience, we brought nearly 100 media to SoCal. All of them were here in your community when we did the celebration at Morro Rock, and that led to 834 million impressions for our destination. We've also hosted 15 research projects over these last 3 years, everything from tourism economic impact studies to visitor volume studies to share of wallet studies, providing your community the opportunity to co-op into those studies at a much lesser cost to provide valuable insight into the direction that you're taking here in your community. In addition, as you know, we are the organization that works with the airport for the establishment of new air service. We've created three new flight markets with Seattle, Denver, and Dallas, totaling over 270,000 additional seats to the market that did not exist 3 short years ago. When we talk about our growing communities and our marketing, we're focused, obviously, on the big feeder markets. And one of the great things about our airport being hub and spoke is we're tapping into those bigger markets. But one of the downfalls of that is those markets are, by nature, because they're larger, they're also more expensive. And so as we grow our target markets, we begin diluting our budget, and it gets spread thinner and thinner as we spread that across more and more destinations. When we started the district a few short years ago, we were in three feeder markets, L.A., San Francisco, and Phoenix, based on the air service there. Since then, we've extended that to seven, and again, with the new air service announcement, we're growing that to nine here very shortly. When we talk about air service in general, air service is really about creating new visitors to the market, visitors who can't get here any other way. You'd be hard-pressed to find visitors in Dallas who are getting in a car and driving to San Luis Obispo County. And in 2015, when we started the air service campaign, two-thirds of our air service capacity was intrastate, L.A., San Francisco, and then again a third market of Phoenix. Today, 58% of our air service is out of the state, so we've really work to grow the opportunity for people who couldn't get here any other way to travel to the community. And the airport and the County Board of Supervisors will tell you that without the work of Visit SoCal, this air service will not continue. We continue to extend that connectivity by the work that we do, opening new flight markets. Again, Portland and San Diego provided our sixth new market and 10th new direct flight in 33 months. So for air service work that for 10 straight years, we didn't see the growth of any air service. As a matter of fact, we were in recession on-air service, again, in 33 months, 6 new markets, and 10 new direct flights. And I'm happy to announce that Denver, after 2 short years, will move to 3 flights a day beginning this month in October. And Dallas, after less than 8 months, will move to 2 flights a day beginning in December. So, again, that work that we're doing is not only providing valuable opportunity for visitors, but it's providing great opportunity for us as residents, along with great opportunity for economic development as we look to grow our connection. In the case of our destination management strategy, it was constructed really to stay competitive over the long run while really working to protect and enhance the resident quality of life, which is the filter by which we run this strategy through. The process has really helped us develop an action plan for the years ahead. There's 28 total recommendations in this plan. I do want to call out specifically, Morro Bay is the only community, this is a countywide plan, Morro Bay is the only community that has a recommendation specific only to them, and that is around the redevelopment of the Morro Bay waterfront and the power plant. A great opportunity for us to come alongside you and help move that initiative forward. But equally in that, in the visitor survey that was done for the establishment of the destination management strategy, customer service countywide scored 62%. And so how do we work to ensure that our industry and our communities have the training they need to be able to provide the service, not only for our visitors, but also for our residents? So the plans in place include working with local communities, Cuesta College, Cal Poly, and developing an online trading platform to help see that come to fruition. And how do we secure the investment needed to see the community projects flourish with things like the Morro Bay power plant? And so working on asset mapping and working with the communities on your areas of focus is going to be equally important, as well the desire for us to create a long-term sustainable destination. We've got to make sure that lodging in our local communities are getting in front of the sustainability of tourism in general. Again, Visit SoCal is not going to own many of these initiatives. Many of them will be owned by the communities, but we'll be working hand-in-hand with the communities to see these initiatives move forward. And we believe, based on your community's involvement in the process, I want to thank Scott Collins, your city manager, who served on the steering committee, along with the mayor and multiple members of the council who have participated in the process to date. But we really believe, with your community's involvement, that the outcomes for the destination management strategy are completely in line with your priorities. So as we think about those key accomplishments and we think about the 10 straight years of growth in tourism over this last decade, we know that there's a series of new properties that are coming online. We've got a growth of 1,100 additional rooms over the next 15 months. It's an 11.8% increase to inventory across the county. We also know that there's another 1,000 rooms to come on after that in the following 2 years. And so the current forecast by Smith Travel Research, the leading indicator for occupancy and RevPAR in the tourism industry, has a decrease in occupancy of 3.5% and a decrease in RevPAR of 1.7% in 2020 alone. So the challenge that we're faced with is really the convergence of this new inventory, along with the slowdown that's occurring not only in the tourism market, but just in our economy, U.S.-wide in general, really could create the perfect storm for our community. And you couple this increase with inventory and a slowdown with the market with the possibility of not renewing Visit SoCal and the countywide marketing effort, and we really could create a tsunami that would be difficult for our communities to overcome, which is what we are trying to stay in front of. So when we consider this, it's really important to understand the landscape that we're competing on. The last few years of success has led us to look deeper into this initiative, and we really need to understand our long-term potential for our economy. And even with all the advancements that we've made, we still fall short in this funding mechanism. And you can see on the screen in front of you some of the competitive set that we're up against. I do want to note that Santa Barbara is currently going through the renewal of their district right now. They are proposing to move their top tier from $450 a night to $750 a night, so their number is going to jump up substantially as well in the next few months. And when we look at this comparison based on a per hotel room, so dollars available by the number of rooms that we need to fill, Visit SoCal falls, SoCal as a destination falls dead last, and this is before this additional increase of 2,000 rooms over the next 3.5 years. So not a formula currently for long-term success when we frame ourselves up against our competitive set. So with that, we turn our focus towards the renewal, and after hearing from the lodging community, our board sees an opportunity for strategic and long-term solution to support these efforts and really combat the threats. And so that's made up of two functions here. Moving the TMD from a 5-year term to a 10-year term allows us to really look from a longer focus and increase our efficiency and reduce our cost. This process alone, we've been working through this process already for about 15 months now. We still, should the council move this item forward to the Board of Supervisors, we'll go all the way through January, February before the process is completed. Exorbitant amount of staff time from our organization, but also your local city as we work with you as well. In addition to that, the legal costs to renew the district are about $80,000, and so we're looking to offset that over a longer term, while also working to increase assessment rate by 0.5%, giving us the ability to control our collective future, close the gap on our competitive set, and really prepare SoCal for both the best and worst case scenarios based on the economy. So here's how that tax and assessment breaks down across some of our competitive communities, and you can see here, even with an increase in 0.5%, we remain below the tax and assessment rate of many of our peers. We remain below the state average, which is currently at 14.9, and will increase again this year when a number of municipalities across the state look to increase their TOT. Last year in November, there were 44 communities across the state with a TOT ballot initiative. Of those, 39 passed, and so that number was lower last year. It will move up again next year. So even with that additional 0.5%, there's still room here in this case should Morro Bay decide to pursue a TOT or an assessment initiative of their own. And I do want to point out that we are still, in addition to being below in the tax and assessment, we're well below our competitive sets of Santa Barbara, Monterey, Napa, and Sonoma, who many of which their hotels and their resorts have not only a parking fee but also a resort fee, which we don't see in our local communities. So here's how that compares locally. You're aware of this setup across the market varying from 12 to 14%. Again, continues to be below the statewide average. So in concert with our board, the lodging community, and the local government, Visit SoCal has identified 5 key strategic areas of investment that would occur over the next 10 years with this extra 0.5%. And these are informed by a third-party consultant who, at the request of the city managers, we conducted an ROI study. And that consultant advised us and the city managers on the best place for these funds to be spent that would have the biggest impact for our communities. And so they include these 5 buckets. The major portion of the dollars would go into advertising, really working to drive repeat visitation and longer length of stay, specifically starting in our drive markets, who will be critical in a downturn of the economy. Also, the sales support that we'll need to offset and create demand for these additional 2,000 rooms, working on group, receptive, and small meeting and conference business to be able to help drive that funnel. Tapping into our international markets and really working to capture a larger share and a longer length of stay from those international travelers who are already moving up and down the corridor of Highway 1 and Highway 101. Continuing to work on our air service development and increasing air service and advancing those markets as we've done over the last 3 years. And then working on the destination management strategy again to improve the resident quality of life and be a resource to our communities as they work to fulfill their master plans. So when we engaged in this process and the city managers asked us to conduct an ROI study, the framework for that is here in front of you. The third party evaluated Visit SoCal's work specifically. The return on investment study showed a $40 to $1 return over the last 3 years on the work that we do. That's collectively for all the work that we do combined. When we look at just the airport alone, it's a 50 to 1 return ratio, and the simple equation there is those who travel by air stay longer and spend more money, and so you see the return there. It is projected that visitor spending would increase by $50 million in the first year and $100 million in year 3 and beyond. So although a small increase of 0.5%, a significant return on investment to our communities. So the state requires for the district to be renewed a 50% plus $1 in revenue support from the countywide lodging community. We've also worked to accomplish that in every single municipality. So though the requirement is countywide, we look to accomplish that in the local communities as well. We've exceeded that number in Morro Bay, and we are now in front of you seeking a resolution from the city to allow the establishment of the district to move forward to the Board of Supervisors. Without your support, the county cannot establish or renew a district in your community, and without that support, Visit SoCal will sunset, its doors will close, and our efforts on behalf of tourism and Morro Bay will cease. So as of today, we've received signed petitions from your lodging inventory, making up more than 74+% with a couple petitions that were delivered today that have not been calculated into this percentage number. And on a larger scale, in 6 short weeks, we've collected over 500 signed petitions throughout the county, showing a clear support for this initiative. When we think about our competitors, and I showed you the budget variance between the competitive markets that we are up against, they all have higher budgets. And in many cases, almost half of their dollars are coming from municipal general funds. We know our communities are not in a position to do something like that. Those general funds are critical to our communities as they look to support fire, roads, police, and education. And so that's why we're in front of you asking tonight for the ability to continue to make our industry self-sustainable through this visitor assessment that does not impact costs to your local residents, providing the tools that we need to continue to grow the industry while increasing TOT and sales tax contribution to help fund the initiatives here in your local communities. And we believe that together we can accomplish that collectively. And I'm happy to take any questions that you might have.
Chuck, thank you for a very comprehensive presentation. And I'll open it up for any council questions you might have. Chuck's here.
I have one.
Don?
Yeah,
please.
Thank you so much. My only question is if you could elaborate a little bit more when you said you'd like to be a partner with Morro Bay around redevelopment of the waterfront and the power plant. And I also wanted to say thank you for, I know when Visit SoCal, I believe, put out a survey a while ago and had the power plant site on there, and I perked up thinking, oh, somebody's finally paying attention to Morro Bay. So I want to say thank you, but also ask what your vision, a little more detail of your vision.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, we want it to be a resource for you. So it's really going to come down to the vision of the city and the council on the direction that you want to go. I think it's interesting in this countywide approach, again, Residence Consultancy, the company that did this, they've done 100 master plans worldwide. They did the country of Ireland, right? That's a really big community. In this study, they called out specifically that this is such a premier location that doesn't exist anywhere else in California, let alone anywhere else on the Pacific Coast, that it needed its own recommendation and focus. And so our goal would be to work with the local community, work with you and city staff on what you would like to see that become. One of the other recommendations in the destination management strategy is the development of an investment team member who would go out on the road and help find investment for the local communities. Chris Fair, the CEO of Residence, was speaking in Austin, Texas back in May at the U.S. Lodging Investors Conference, and he field tested this recommendation by asking a room of several hundred people how many people had ever heard of San Luis Obispo County, Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, Pismo Beach, Paso Robles, and about 8 people in the room raised their hand. So although we think we're a well-known destination outside of a 3-hour radius, we're traditionally not. And we have a lot of lodging investment from people who are from California, from the gateways of LA and San Francisco, but not once we start moving outside the state. So we really believe that there's an opportunity to get this destination on the map with those people who are thinking about investing big dollars into a community that they weren't otherwise available or aware of. And so we think building out kind of those test sheets, those asset maps of what you would like the vision of that to be, and us being able to take that on the road and help showcase it to drive that back into the community is probably where we start as you continue the visioning for what you want your community to become long term.
Any other questions for Chuck?
Yes. Sure.
Marlis, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I wanted to thank you. Chuck was kind enough to meet with me, and so I did get my questions answered, and I also attended the TBID meeting, so I've seen the presentation. And I know that we received an email about somebody who was skeptical about the return on investment, and I was also curious about that. So if you could just very briefly describe that. This isn't a guess. This is a more scientific way to do it, but I think it would be helpful for people to know.
Yes, absolutely. And Scott Collins has the full almost 50-page report of the return on investment study. When the city managers asked us to do that, you know, we could have gone with, you know, anybody to do that study. We reached out to Tourism Economics. They're the largest economic company in tourism. They do all of the research for the United States government when it comes to tourism. So we wanted to use a tested case in the process. They look only at our work, and I'll get a little in the weeds for a second to help explain this, but so when we place advertising, we use a company called Arrivalist to pixel that advertising. That advertising then shows up on one of your electronic devices. So it shows up on your phone. It then attaches itself to your Google profile, so it's now attached to your phone, your laptop, your computer, your desktop. From there, it tracks all of your interactions with us, what ads we're serving you, what ads you respond to. From there, it notifies us when you show up in the market. So we know how, from the first time we served you an ad, what ads you looked at, whether it was a beach ad, a wine ad, an arts ad. We know what you responded to and how long it took you to show up in market. The technology now allows us, when you show up in market, to follow your entire trip here. So we're able to see within a 5-mile radius what you've done and where you've spent the majority of your time, allowing us to pinpoint also when somebody flies in from the airport what the community of their primary stay is. So where do they go and what does their hub and spoke model become? We know that people that travel to this destination don't just come and stay in one community. They stay in a community and they get out and explore the county. So all of that to say, that is how detailed our tracking is. Tourism Economics is able to then take that information and say, from those people that we're serving ads to and those people who are responding to the ads and showing up in the county, we know that the average spend of somebody here who visits is X. They're able to use that as a multiplier to help concept what that return on investment is. They do give that investment a significant haircut just to make sure that for the sake of skepticism, it's projected that that number is honestly significantly higher than that, but they propose the number lower than that to make sure that they're cutting out any sequences that could happen. When we talk about the case of air service, obviously nobody outside of Visits Locale is advertising in Denver and Dallas and Seattle. That's work only done by us. Your local TBIDs, the local TBIDs throughout the community don't advertise there, so it's very easy to get specific on what the return on investment is. We have in-plane and employment and deplanement data from the airport on how many people are flying in, what the level, how long they're here based on when their return trip is. So it's the methodology behind it is very comprehensive.
Thank you. I thought people would be interested in hearing that. And then I just have one last question, because I know you're in a hurry to leave. Do you foresee, you've indicated that you are foreseeing sort of a slump in the market. Is it due to overbuilding of our hotels? Should we be concerned about that at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're seeing a slump. You know, tourism's on a 10-year run rate. Since they started tracking tourism in 1925, never have they seen 10 straight years of growth. So this is unprecedented where we are, and it's got to start leveling out at some point, which is what we're beginning to see. 2,000 rooms in inventory coming online. I think the fortunate part of much of that, especially when you talk about San Luis Obispo down to the South Coast, the majority of that is independent boutique properties. It's not another flag. So it's new and unique stuff that our county doesn't currently have a lot of, and that's going to help drive new visitation. It's going to take time to get people aware when they think of, hey, I really want to travel to a 4-star resort, that exists here, because we haven't had a lot of it, and so there's work that has to be done there. I don't think, you know, we've got pockets of communities. Morro Bay is a really good example that doesn't have a lot of that inventory, and so I think when you consider, you know, what your master plan looks like, I think there still remains opportunity in Morro Bay. In a place maybe like Paso, where they've got a 46% increase to lodging inventory coming online over the next 3 years, you know, that's going to be a little bit harder than maybe it's going to be here. And so I think the other thing that we know is regardless of what community it's in, people continue to search for lodging on the coast. And so there's always a great opportunity to continue to provide new and unique opportunities in that. And we do that through your hotel and motel inventory, but I also want to be clear, we also do that through our vacation rental inventory and our RV park inventory, which is equally important because travelers travel in different ways for different reasons.
Thank you very much.
We know where you had dinner, where you bought gas, by the way, this evening, and we also will know where you're headed if you don't go to the council meeting in Atascadero. So
it is, from a marketing standpoint, amazing. From
data.
A consumer standpoint, extremely scary.
Scary, indeed. Any other questions for Chuck? Seeing none with that, Chuck, thank you so much. I'm going to open public comment for item C-3. Any members of the public wishing to come forward? I do have one speaker slip. Tony LaGrasse. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, thank you. My name's Tony LaGrasse. I have a vacation rental company in Cayucas, and we do business in Morro Bay and Cambria as well. And I just wanted to say I'm in full support of this TMD renewal. They've done a fantastic job, and that's all. Just short and sweet, I'm in full support of that for our industry.
Thank you, and sorry about the mispronunciation. I couldn't read your writing. My bad. Public comment is still open for anybody in the public that would like to come forward now regarding item C-3. Please do so now. Seeing none, I will close public comment, bring it back to council. I will start. Chuck, I have been impressed with what you have done from the very beginning. I've been involved since the inception. We had a conversation very early on about the fact that I'm very data-driven, and you said, oh my, so am I, and I have seen the fruits of those labors of collecting data, understanding tourists, what they do, how they act, what they eat, where they go, and how to get them here, and I've very much appreciated that. I've noted in the report the significant impact that you folks have had, you and your organization, over the last 4 years. That's on page 110, noted very well in our study or our staff report. Second, you completed a strategic planning process that you were asked to do, and we very much appreciate that. And as Councilmember Addis noted, we're mentioned, and we have a significant property that needs to be developed that is the only one that appears on your report, and we appreciate that greatly. That's page 110 also of the report. Three, I always appreciate the fact that you do ROI analysis, return on investment, because you can espouse positive things and anecdotally tell stories, but you back it up with data. We have great data that you have supplied to back that up, and that's on page 111 of the report if you're interested. And then four, you know, we have our TBID has unanimously supports this. They voted to approve the renewal and move forward with the assessment. I appreciate the work that they did. They did come that did come with recommendations for improvement, as noted in our staff report on page 12. That's part of this. For all of those reasons, and for the fact that tourism right now is our single economic engine, in my opinion, this is an absolute must for Morro Bay to have this assessment increase approved, for you to continue to do what you're doing, and for you and your team to work more closely with us to help us and our great folks achieve the results we're looking for. So with that, I will move adoption of resolution number 84-19, granting consent to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors to renew the slow CTMD for lodging establishments in Morro Bay for a 10-year period with a 1.5% assessment, and authorizing the mayor to send an accompanying letter to the county and visit SoCal boards, making recommendations for improving collaborative performance going forward. And that's noted in our staff report on page 112 that would be included.
Second.
So motion by Mayor Heading and second by Councilmember Davis, and I'll open it up for discussion.
I would just like to say I concur totally with your recommendation, and I would simply add one thing that you left off, and that was that you have really done your homework with the hoteliers. And so for all of the reasons that you cited, Mr. Mayor, I would add that one as a reason to support this.
Councilmember Heller. I'm just wondering, Chuck, does Google have anything to do with you knowing where everybody is all the time and where they went, how they spent their money? Okay. Report, the work is outstanding, a great help to our community. Thank you very much.
Great. No other comments? Then roll call vote.
I have a comment.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. I was looking. That's my fault. I was being slow.
No. Councilmember Addis,
I just want to say thank you. I very much appreciate the regional approach, obviously, since you're SoCal, but I appreciate that Morro Bay is a focus within the regional approach because sometimes we get lost. And then I very much look forward to some of those recommended improvements, especially in the areas of interoperability, budget, and joint developed goals. And I think you bring a lot to the table that that we can leverage. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Councilmember Addis. And with that, any further comments? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you again. Thank you for your presentation. Remember, 15 miles per hour as you get halfway to Atascadero, we'll be watching. That moves us to item number C-1. And that is review of options related to local tobacco and vaping regulations. This was agendized by myself a number of months ago, or requested to be agendized, and I received council support, given the fact that we received a rather poor rating from the ALA, American Lung Association. Since that time, staff's done some a tremendous amount of work, and I'll turn it over to our city manager to review where we are, and in conjunction with our city attorney. They both have done a tremendous amount of work, and we thank you for what you're bringing to us tonight.
Thank you, Mayor. Scott Collins, city manager. We also have a representative from County Health who is here to answer questions since they are the experts. But they help supply a lot of great information for this report. So as council's aware, we did receive a pretty poor grade from the American Lung Association related to our secondhand smoke ordinances and other things put in place to kind of regulate the sales and outdoor smoke and secondhand smoke ordinances. Like most cities, we have taken significant steps in California and across the nation to reduce indoor and outdoor smoking where people tend to congregate. Both private and public residents and parks and restaurants, et cetera. That really kind of came in the wake of irrefutable evidence being provided for decades about the horrendous health effects of secondhand smoke and smoking generally, in addition to the litter that smoking creates in the public. Thus, the city has banned indoor and outdoor smoking in most public places, including places of employment, public accommodations, transit, with limited exceptions for private residents and vehicles and designated smoking areas. The city did receive a letter grade of D for its anti-smoking efforts despite all these efforts, and the American Lung Association did highlight in their score sheet, which is attachment one, the several areas in which the city could improve significantly its score and move up to a letter grade of A, where we belong. This includes enhancing the city's multifamily home indoor and outdoor common area smoking policy, pursuing a local tobacco retail license program that several other cities in California have adopted, which helps reduce the sale of tobacco to minors, and addressing emerging issues such as vaping. Those policy options are discussed a little bit later in this discussion, and we'll provide plenty of opportunity for council to understand the various options at your disposal. So at the same time, we were sort of looking at the ways to improve our score with the American Lung Association. This issue of vaping has really exploded, even really in the last couple months, quite frankly. Not only the concerns about the long-term health effects of a addiction to vaping, but now the more acute and harmful issues of folks showing up to emergency rooms, doctor's offices, health clinics, not being able to breathe and not understanding why. And through the good work of the CDC and other organizations, they've been able to sort of narrow it down. And associated with vaping, 1,000 cases have shown up in hospitals across the nation, and 10 deaths or 18 deaths have been related to vaping. So not only is it our concern about the long-term health effects, but the immediate effects of vaping. In response, the Surgeon General for the United States and the California Department of Public Health and several other health organizations have issued advisories, health advisories, to the general public to educate them about the harmful effects of vaping and understanding there is an imminent health risk to using such products. Vaping is an inhaling of aerosol from an e-cigarette or other vaping device, which heats the liquid, which can contain nicotine, marijuana, cannabis, or CBD, or other substances like flavored tobacco or just flavors that entice the youth. According to CDPH, which is the California Department of Public Health, the shapes and sizes of these devices may vary, and lots of times they look like pens or USB flash drives, things we associate with technology and not the consumption of harmful drugs, including things like cell phones and credit card holders and highlighters. These devices are frequently known as e-cigarettes, e-cigs, vapes, vape pens, etc. For consistency's sake, we'll just refer to them as vaping or vaping devices. The vapor itself contains toxins, including ones that cause cancer and tiny particles that are harmful when breathed in. And in some cases, in a lot of cases actually, vaping can deliver a significant concentration of nicotine to its user, and those long-term health effects are known. Nicotine addiction is a terrible thing. It's a hard addiction to kick, and in fact, vaping was sort of sprung up as an alternative to cigarette smoke, but now has become a substitute for cigarette smoking, especially with our youth. Youth use of vaping has outpaced cigarette consumption. According to new statistics, the number of eighth graders using is 17.6%, 32.3% of 10th graders, and 37.3% of 12th graders have reported vaping in the last year, which is an astronomical increase just over the previous year. And the U.S. Surgeon General reports that there's higher use of vaping than with high school age kids than with adults. And there's no surprise, given that the vape products have been packaged specifically with youth in mind, and having flavored varieties such as gummy bear or gum or cotton candy or fruit punch, it's really no surprise that those are geared and advertised to children in hopes of gaining lifelong consumers of their and customers of their products. There are now 15,000 flavors available on the market. According to a study done locally here, 2017-18, California Healthy Kids Survey for Morro Bay High School of 9th graders and 11th graders, just kind of a general check on all things related to health. Of those who were surveyed, 18% of 9th graders and 22% of 11th graders said they had vaped in the last month. And over 60% of the students surveyed thought it was fairly easy or very easy for high school students to obtain vaping products. This is Morro Bay High School we're talking about. City staff, myself, Jody included, Marie Lamelli, our school resource officer, and others, and met with the high school principal and his staff, and he said this is a concerning issue for him. We spoke with the Los Osos Middle School, and they said it is an emerging issue, particularly with those who are at risk for other issues. So it's obviously something we're watching closely locally, and both schools are working very hard to educate their students, but also their parents, about the dangers of vaping any product, whether it's nicotine or flavors or cannabis. And I think the national attention brought to this issue is bringing it home for everybody. So unfortunately, one of the serious health risks associated with teenage use of vaping is the potential for addiction to nicotine. It's particularly troubling for kids because their brains are still developing, and a lifelong addiction to nicotine leads to significant number of harmful health effects, which we don't need to go into because we know the story with tobacco. It'll be the same story here with vaping. So in response to the growing concerns, U.S. Food and Drug Administration is finally moving on this issue. They've sent over 1,300 warning letters and civil penalty complaints to companies that have legally sold vaping products to minors nationwide using an undercover sting operation. And they've also ordered the major manufacturers to come into compliance and submit their plans to be regulated a year ahead than they would normally have been required under the FDA guidance. But at this time, the FDA has still not deemed these products to be safe, and they hope to at least evaluate them and provide a review by 2021. But that is still 2 years from today. In the meantime, many states and localities have taken action on their own, not waiting for the feds to do that, and have banned the sale of either flavored tobacco, vaping products that appeal to children. And some have even taken the step of instituting wholesale bans of vaping products altogether in their communities. So City Council may want to consider similar actions among those that we'll talk about in a few minutes that will help our school with the American Lung Association. So as far as an option to improve our grade, when we look back to the secondhand smoke ordinance, our city attorney did a great job of outlining in this report the various things we can really do to solidify our score, particularly looking at multifamily home smoking regulations. That's an area we were very deficient. And it's outlined in the staff report if you want to look into to those various things we can do. In addition, in order to help reduce the sale of tobacco products to minors, recommended to consider looking at a tobacco retail license program. What this allows us to do is collect license fees from our local purveyors of tobacco products. I think there's about 20 of them in Morro Bay, maybe a few more. That money could be helped used to educate not only them, but the folks who frequent their stores, but also provide enforcement efforts to address sales to minors. And this has proven very effective in other communities. So there's proposed additions to the municipal code that would help bring that program alive. So in looking at just those actions alone, our current score of D would be upgraded to an A for the American Lung Association. And the ALA also assigns bonus points for emerging issues, and one of those is vaping. And, so the City Council could consider a number of options related to vaping restrictions. A permanent ban on all sales could be instituted, much like the City and County of San Francisco, who have tied their vaping ban to until such time the FDA has approved use, they will maintain a wholesale ban of vaping products, for tobacco vaping, that is. There is an initiative that's been put on the ballot for 2020 to upend that that effort, but the Juul is the leading provider of vaping products in the world, and they were the ones who put forward that initiative, and they themselves have backed away from that initiative after all the negative press that they've taken on. There are other cities who, I believe maybe Tascadero and at least Arroyo Grande, are considering banning flavored vaping products, because those are the ones that have been sort of deemed to be addressed specifically at minors. And, sort of as a middle ground to say, well, these are the ones we're concerned about. And if you put that in combination with a tobacco retail license program where you're doing checks on sales to minors, you really could limit the flow of those products locally to our children. We also already have in our municipal code e-cigarettes as it relates to smoke and the outdoor secondhand side. So we already have taken care of that. So that gives you an idea of sort of the options. There's obviously other things we could do, but those are sort of the big ones. As I mentioned, the FDA is set to move forward with their review of these products a year earlier than they had anticipated. The president has made this an issue of concern. There are some states, including California, that may consider banning the sale of the flavors, or maybe going further anyhow, up and beyond what the cities like ourselves are considering. So some of the questions I want to throw out for discussion for council and the communities: would the council like to pursue any changes to the secondhand smoke ordinance that were outlined in the staff report? Would City Council like to pursue a tobacco retail license program? And is there council interest in regulating the sales of vaping products in Morro Bay? And if so, what level of regulation would council like to pursue? Is it banning of flavors, or is it going to the level that City and County of San Francisco have gone to ban all vaping products that pervade tobacco and nicotine? Are there any other vaping or tobacco regulations the city council would like us to pursue? So that gives you an idea, again, no action tonight, but giving direction so that we could bring back something as soon as the next meeting for city council to consider. I have spoken with the chamber about this and making sure we educate and provide opportunity for those who provide these products, the community, to have a voice in this discussion. Also, very important that we reached out to the high school and the county health on this, since they have a lot of really good information for us to consider as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins and Mr. Niemeyer, for a very comprehensive report and addressing all the issues, I think, of concern. And we have a number of questions before us tonight. I want to open it up to council for questions from either Mr. Collins, Mr. Niemeyer, or we have an expert in the audience as well. Thank you. Good to see you. So who would like to start us off? Any questions? Yes, Councilmember Addis. Thank you. And by the way, I failed to recognize that I'm on a subcommittee with Councilmember Addis with regard to this, and I wanted to thank her for her review of the information. We've discussed it on a couple of occasions, and just wanted to recognize that. So thank you for that, and I'll let you go ahead and lead us off.
And thank you for that and for bringing it forward. I just have two main questions. I know you just said that you'd be communicating out. So if council moved forward, you'd communicate out through chamber with the high school, with the county. But what about residents who may live in multifamily units and communicating out to them? Or how would we capture more just the general population?
I mean, that's a good question. We could probably reach out to those who are property managers in the area, because it does have an effect on private residents. The issue is that there's a lot of turnover in these homes, and if there's smoke in them, it creates an issue and close proximity to their neighbors, and just sort of the smoke kind of ventilating through the rest of the units. It, just like with hotels, it has the same effect. So that's what the ALA has kind of identified as the next level for the city to address. But it certainly is a change from where we are today. And so I think maybe at minimum working with the property managers to make them aware of that, to explain to the residents. A lot of this is about education. We're not going to go after people to send them to jail for smoking. It's more about educating how their choices affect their neighbors.
And I guess I'm thinking of so that a resident knows that they have right. a right to speak up about mm-hmm. it
sure.
on that side. And then
real quick, if I could address that, the proposed ordinance has in there a requirement that signs need to be posted at properties where smoking is going to be prohibited henceforth. So there would need to be, at a minimum, signs posted at the multi-unit residents by the landlords. So that's one way the information would be conveyed.
Thank you. And then are there downsides to an all-out ban that isn't pendant on and if the FDA approves? Like San Francisco did the one where it's until the FDA approves. But is there a downside to being more far-reaching than the FDA and just saying we just want to ban this and we're done?
To date, a number of jurisdictions, including states, have actually temporarily just banned vaping products. Montana has temporarily banned the sale of flavored e-cigarettes for 120 days. Michigan's banned the sale of all flavored e-cigarettes. New York's banned flavored e-cigarettes. Massachusetts banned all vape products for 4 months. I think that the most prudent approach would be to link it to the FDA, and then if the FDA later comes back with some sort of report that essentially preempts local law and says that these must be allowed, well, then we don't have to do anything with our law. If the FDA comes out with something that says there's further problems, jurisdictions can do what they want, it'd be easy enough to just amend that ordinance to say it's now, just continues indefinitely. But given that there's federal control in some respects over these products and what's legal and what's illegal, I think the San Francisco approach is just a prudent way to remain consistent with federal law, whatever the feds may end up doing or not doing.
Can we be more conservative, though, than say the FDA says we don't see a problem with this? Can Morro Bay still say, and we want to ban it.
To be clear, the research that's been done has indicated that there's no state or federal prohibitions on just banning, e-cigarettes, vaping products. Even some cities are now prohibiting the sale of cigarettes in their jurisdictions. Interestingly, the state and federal laws preempt local control over basically the health research on it. The FDA has the final word on whether it's healthy or not. But in regards to the sale of the product with proper findings, the city council, for purposes of public health, safety, and welfare, can restrict or prohibit the sale of products commercially. And increasingly, we're seeing cities and counties and even states take that stance. So as a public health issue, generally it should be okay. To date, there's been no litigation over whether a city or state or county generally can or cannot ban the sale of vaping products or cigarettes. At some point, that might show up. I think reasonably a city could do that for public health reasons. Certainly, cigarette smoking is not a protected class. There's no right to smoke cigarettes. So the answer is probably could just ban them, and it would be consistent with state and federal law, but we don't have a definitive court ruling on that to date. We don't have a definitive court ruling on that, but I would suspect that if somebody were to bring a lawsuit against some local ban on vaping, the courts would probably say as long as the findings are strong enough to justify the public health justification that it would be upheld. But I can't say that with certainty.
The reason I ask is because the FDA has been known to make mistakes around what's healthy for the general public. So I have questions around, could there be backlash from the FDA if we were more conservative? It sounds like no, but there hasn't really been any backlash in general around municipalities being more conservative than the FDA.
Well, in regards to the FDA going out on that kind of a limb, to date they have been not even pushing to get the pre-market clearance reports from the vaping companies. And I don't see the FDA moving ahead of even doing the reports, taking action against cities or counties. They, given the benefit of the doubt, I guess, have been focusing on other priorities, but they really haven't been taking much action on vaping. Looks like there's an executive push at the presidential level to try to get some sort of studies done, but it's been years now that the FDA has said that they've been working on this.
That's all my questions.
Great. Thank you so much. Councilmember Davis, no questions. Councilmember McPherson.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for this report. Just a couple questions. I had some of the same questions that Congresswoman Addis had, so I appreciate her asking them. I will not repeat them, especially with respect to public outreach, because I would like us to talk about, if we're going to do something, how we are, in fact, going to reach out and let people know what we're doing and give them an opportunity to comment. I noticed that you have, in your definition of smoking, you include vaping. And I'm wondering to what extent that is common practice. And I say that because I just got back from Oregon, where all of their signs say no smoking or vaping. So they have specifically mentioned, so that there's no doubt in anyone's mind, that vaping is considered smoking. Just your rationale for why you would want to just include that in the definition of smoking.
It already is. In fact, the code was amended back when the council brought before this body cannabis regulation. And at the same time, we amended the secondhand smoke ordinance, which has been in place for quite some time, to include electronic cigarettes. Increasingly, the trend is, when cities or counties revisit secondhand smoking ordinances, they are including vaping, and a lot of them predate the era of vaping. So, when legislative bodies get around to it or have the opportunity, they add vaping into it.
Right. So we could, in our ordinance, if we were to make changes, include and vaping. So it was obvious that it did.
Oh, you mean the actual word vaping instead of electronic cigarettes?
Well,
just to make it very clear
to the public. Yes.
Especially when we start to talk about putting up signs, which we just talked about.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, Council Member McPherson, that you know, the code could simply be amended to say that, you know, the common term for what we're describing here is vaping. And we could actually require that the signs that are being posted just simply say no vaping.
Yeah, I just would want to make sure that the public would understand a no smoking means more than that.
We could do that.
Okay. And I noticed that in your proposed possible licensing of selling tobacco products, you talked about a fee and a fine. Do you have any idea about what that would consist of, how large it would be, and what it would be intended to cover?
The actual fee would need to be the result of a study on what sort of city costs would be incurred through the enforcement. It could be a substantial fee as long as it just simply goes towards covering the costs of this product being in the community. Of course, fees have to be tied to the activity that they're being levied upon. It's a long-winded way of saying I'm not sure what the fee would be because we haven't done the study yet.
Right, but it would include any costs of enforcement because it strikes me that that's one of the main purposes here of requiring some kind of a permit. Yeah, okay. All right, and I just wanted to mention that my reading is that Arroyo Grande is actually considering a ban very similar to San Francisco, so not just flavored products, but actually the same language as the San Francisco ordinance. So, thank you.
That is correct.
Yep, thank you. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Heller.
No question.
Okay. And I have no questions. With that, public comment is now open for item C-1. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Looking around. Ah, there you are. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Ingrid Aponitis. I'm the program manager for tobacco control at the County Public Health Department. And I want to applaud the council and city staff for their work on this issue. We're really excited to see Morro Bay champion this and moving forward addressing vaping among our youth especially, but among the community at large as well. One other option that I didn't see listed in the staff report, which is worth considering that San Francisco did, was they actually also addressed the online distribution of tobacco products to persons residing in the city. And that's one thing, the million-dollar question that we get, where are kids getting these products? And we know from compliance checks that we've done around the area that kids are able to buy them locally, and we also hear anecdotally that kids are able to get them online. What percent are getting them locally versus online, it's hard to say, but both the city of San Francisco and the city of Lafayette have restricted sales to on-site only, so restricted online distribution. I wanted to just add that to the conversation. Thank you.
Could you clarify your last comment? Restricted to on-site, did you say?
On-site only, yeah. So banning the online purchasing of these products.
Thank you. Public comment is still open for item C-1. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. This is for input. I will refer you specifically to the staff report page number 38, questions for city council. And I'm happy to start this off unless one of you has a burning desire. Well, obviously, being a healthcare professional, I am significantly concerned about the public health impacts of not only continuous smoking but vaping, and especially what's happening to our young people in our schools. I also have had the opportunity to speak to our high school principal, junior high school vice principals, and a number of individuals, and am very concerned about the proliferation of vaping. The issue for me, pharmacologically, being
a pharmacologist, is that nicotine is much more addicting than heroin or cocaine. And most people don't know that, but the addictive liability, because of the short half-life of nicotine, is extremely high. Secondarily, the concentrations of nicotine in the products that are out there are not your mom and dad's cigarette concentrations. These are concentrations that are as high as 50 times what you would see in a single pack of cigarette, often in a single vape unit, so to speak. And so for anybody, young or older, the addictive liability is extreme and occurs very rapidly. For young people especially, the cognitive effects are significant. Memory loss, issues with depression, suicidal ideation, agitation, anxiety, a whole host of things. And the costs associated with now what we see are accelerated incidents of public health and significant health issues are beginning to mount. If today smoking never existed and we had in the federal coffers the funds that we spend on health care for issues secondary to smoking, we would have no problem whatsoever in paying for health care for free for everybody. And that gives you the magnitude of what smoking has done over the years. Personally, I support it's not a staff recommendation, but the questions for discussion, I would personally like to pursue changes to the secondhand smoke ordinance to include restrictions on multifamily units. I would like to see the council pursue tobacco retail license program. I would be interested in regulating the sales of vaping and e-cigarette products in Morro Bay to the level of a ban of all flavors and e-cigarettes or vaping, similar to or exactly the same as the San Francisco ordinance. And I would like to support the recommendations made to provide for us an A grade with regard to the American Lung Association recommendations, including all of the what I'll call optional or bonus point issues. For me, this is significant. For our young people, I think it's significant. And I'd like to see Morro Bay take the lead in moving. The FDA will address this, but the FDA will take a long time to do it. And I don't believe that we have the time to waste. Now, I am concerned about our retailers. I visited, I won't name the sites, a couple of sites that had, to my surprise, being a non-smoker, not frequenting these places, well, not going to these places, huge quantities in stock of vaping products, vaping flavored products, vaping units, and from a business standpoint, I would be concerned about the ability to move inventory, and I think with any kind of recommendation to do this, before it came back to us for final approval, it would probably be a couple of months or more, and that would at least get the message out and help us also educate the public with regard to what a couple of council members talked about, and that is for the units that may have smokers now or condominiums where restrictions would for common areas would be enacted, we could do education and outreach, and that would allow us to do that. So that's my position, and I know it's strong, but it's a big concern for me, and I'll stop there and ask for anybody else's input.
Thank you. I have a question about how you stop or enforce online distribution. Could you talk to us about that? Sorry, I forgot your name.
I'm not 100% sure on how they're doing this, but I believe it's like other sales restrictions, for example, with firearms, where it's the responsibility of the distributor to know the laws, the local laws, so that, you know, for example, if somebody's putting in their zip code to a purchase site, then that, you know, blocks the sale from going to that. And it just gives the city staff, the city attorney, the power to then, if a complaint comes in saying that there was a product delivered to somebody's household, if a parent finds out that their kid got one of these, then the city has the authority to litigate that distributor.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Councilman Heller, echoing what the expert said, you know, San Francisco is prohibiting, you know, the purchase through the internet of vaping products. The reality is the enforcement would largely be complaint driven, short of having, you know, designated staff to go out trying to find these issues. It would be largely complaint driven, but it would give some teeth to law enforcement where there's egregious violations and they look into it, and obviously it was internet purchase.
Okay, so I want to thank you as well. This is really a great report. I know you put a lot into it. Really super report. I really like this graph here, and my main comment is I want to kick Slo's ass. and we can do it. We can do it right here. And I would like to go on a fairly extreme position and check all these boxes except one, which is the single package cigar item here. My brother-in-law comes to town once in a while, and he likes to have a cigar once in a while. We go, and I'd like him to be able to buy a single cigar without having to buy a bunch. Everything else here I'm completely on board with, and I don't think we should wait on the FDA. And I say let's do it and be at the top of the pile here.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller.
Yes, I am going to echo the mayor's recommendation. I feel that the number one responsibility of city government is to protect the health and safety of its residents, and this is how we do it. I am in favor of every bonus point on page 37. And I am in favor of answer yes to all of the three questions on page 38, including adopting the ordinance that San Francisco did, including online products.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Addis?
Sure.
Down there you
yeah.
Are.
Well, thank you for bringing this back. And to me, it's an imperative issue. I'm extremely frustrated with the nicotine industry that we have to face this again. And I know both as a parent whose son was in high school and then left for his junior year and came back for his senior year, we saw during 10th grade almost nobody was vaping. And when he came back as a senior, the number of kids that were vaping. And so I think this is an incredible problem, and one that we face because you can't tell what's a vape and what is just a normal electronic equipment when we're in the public school system. And so it's a huge problem. I want to say I'm sensitive to local business needs and I'm sensitive to cigar smokers, but I don't think our kids have time to wait. And I don't think we have time to wait to protect the health of our children if we have the opportunity to do something. So if there is going to be somewhat of a lag time, I just hope it can be as short as possible. I appreciate the idea of getting the word out, obviously, but I don't want to draw this out too long. And I want us to take the opportunity to be good partners to our school district and leaders for our local residents. I think that's key. And so in terms of changing the municipal code to get the A grade and to get the bonus points, I would say yes to everything on that list. And in terms of permanently banning the sale of all e-cigarettes and related products and accessories, I don't want anything conditional. I don't want to wait on the FDA and see if they eventually approve this. I think we can just ban it and move on and feel good about our ban and feel good about protecting the health and welfare of our community. And maybe the FDA is trustworthy and maybe they come back with something important to say, but maybe they come back and say that they think vaping is okay. And I don't see nicotine addictive substances as being healthy for the community of Morro Bay. And so I'd like us to take a stronger stance than even San Francisco did and not put something conditional, but just move forward with it. I am a yes on pursuing a local tobacco retail license program and an absolute yes on banning online distribution with the city. So I'm saying ban it, not necessarily restrict to on-site purchase only, but ban online as well within the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember McPherson.
Well, interesting discussion, I must say. I would agree to pursuing changes to the secondhand smoke ordinance to include multifamily units after we have done some outreach and get a sense of how it would affect people and what the reaction to it is. I think we need to get way more citizen involvement and input on this issue before we implement any kind of draconian measures personally. I do think we should pursue a local tobacco retail license program. I am interested in regulating the sale, but my concern is about underage kids. Those are the people that I absolutely would like to make sure that we can keep, you know, smoking products out of their hands. I think an adult has a choice, and I personally would not support a universal ban on any of these products. I think as long as they're legal and as long as people, adults, choose, they should have that right. Not that they can offend other people, but I don't want to be the one taking care of the health of everybody else. So I wouldn't support that, but I could certainly support a ban on flavors because those appeal mostly to young people. And I think we could consider a ban on vaping that is like the San Francisco ordinance after we've had some public outreach and input on what the community thinks about that. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you all for your comments. Mr. Collins and Mr. Niemeyer, do you feel you have enough information? Here's what I'm sensing from the majority. There is a sense of urgency. There is agreement that a notification is important, but urgency trumps that with regard to the majority. The notations about considerations across the board by the majority are supported with a couple of minor exceptions. However, the majority supports all of them, and for both adults and for young people, and time is of the essence. I'm just trying to summarize. There were some dissenting small things, but again, I was trying to capture the majority, which would mean that we would look to hopefully have a draft of an ordinance back. Or maybe I should ask you, Chris, what's the next step on this?
Yeah, so that all is clear, except for vaping. Sounds like the majority you were saying is looking for a complete ban on all vaping, or just flavored. And then also the question is whether or not it's going to be tied to FDA or just be a wholesale ban, because that would affect how the ordinance is written. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'll speak for myself. I support a wholesale ban of all vaping.
Wholesale ban.
Wholesale ban for
wholesale ban.
Yeah.
Wholesale ban of all vaping. Yep.
Well, that's
wholesale ban of all vaping.
Yep.
Okay.
I don't really care what the FDA says.
Yeah.
Okay. I do not.
It's okay.
Okay, and then also for the time period in which it would take for a ban to take effect in multi-unit residences and outreach and whatnot, that's something that I think we could discuss, you know, when an ordinance is brought back on when it goes into effect, so that doesn't have to be determined now. I think with the ordinance that we presented on secondhand smoke and then putting together a vaping one, we could have something in maybe two meetings, and then the council could move forward with it from that meeting.
Good.
Great. Sounds like we've got heads nodding. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is that the November meeting?
I think there's one in November, yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to thank, again, both of you for the significant amount of work that you did in bringing this, and to our regulatory people out there that are educating and helping us
and opening our eyes to really what's happening in our jurisdiction, but also across the country. You see it on the news just about every day now. So thank you for a good, robust discussion, as always. And with that, unless you need a biofood break, I will move us to item C2.
I could use a break.
Okay, we'll take a 5-minute biofluid break and be right back. Thank you, and we will reconvene. We're back. Give people a minute to reconvene. Moving to item C-2. This is a quarterly update from Central Coast Aquarium for the potential future Morro Bay Aquarium. And we have Ms. Christine Johnson, Executive Director of CCA here, and I'll let Mr. Collins open this item.
I'm going to let Harbor Director Eric Endersby
open this item. Hi, Mr. Endersby, if you'd like to open that up. Thank you so much for that.
He hasn't spoken in a while.
Yeah, thanks for that. So good evening. So we do have the aquarium item up for consideration tonight. So as you know, back in March, City Council approved moving forward in partnership with CCA, Central Coast Aquarium, pursuing this potential project and put 4 milestones out there to achieve in a 1-year period. Those were milestone number 1 was concept and philanthropic plan presented to Council within 90 days, which was done earlier this year, and then a business and marketing plan presented to Council within 180 days. That's tonight. And concept plan update presented to the council in 270 days. That will be upcoming, and then the final report at the end of the year to decide whether or not we're going to continue moving forward in this partnership. At the June 25th meeting, the council was presented with that 90-day milestone, which is included with this report as an attachment. That was mainly a design consultant presentation on aquarium exhibit design and other project activity to date from the Central Coast Aquarium's Executive Director, Christine Johnson. And tonight she has milestone number 2 report tonight. I think she has a staff PowerPoint presentation to be given. And also probably of primary importance is the updating on the fundraising efforts for the needed $38,200 for the exhibit and architectural design plans. Had a good amount already pledged in hand, and then some more money pledged to date that yet to be received. And I think we'll hear from Ms. Johnson tonight where she is on that, and I'm not going to steal her thunder on that. And so I'll invite Ms. Johnson up at some point here, unless you have questions first. And we'll move
I think we'll just go ahead and invite Ms. Johnson. Welcome back, I should
Hello.
Say. Welcome back.
Well, yeah, that you asked for that, and here we are, and at the will of the council, we're back. So excited to be here. Good evening. And I'm just going to go through. I'll take this opportunity tonight, if you indulge me, just in case folks are watching for the first time, just to remind them that we are a nonprofit organization, the Central Coast Aquarium, and that our mission is to cultivate a community dedicated to ocean stewardship through education, engagement, and action. And we do all of that in Avila Beach right now. We have a board of directors, volunteers who guide us and work with me on policy and fiscal responsibility, 3 full-time management staff, myself and 2 other employees, and 4 part-time aquarium educators. But clearly the superstars that make it happen are our over 80 volunteers who serve as docents, school program facilitators, and aquarists. So our overall impact from 2018 and 2019, because it's great to have an organization, but if you're not making an impact with your work, then what's kind of the point of what you're doing? So we are proud to say that from the 2018-19 year, we're able to say that we served 33,450 students and members of the public, either at our aquarium program, this is an educational program, or an outreach science education program. So what would be an example of outreach is that when we come here to the Morro Bay Library and we bring our Tadpoles on Tour program, we reach, you know, sometimes over 100 people in an hour there, so that adds into that. And then also we were invited and we're happy to be here for the Amgen finish in May, and that's another place where I think our booth that day with our mobile touch tank, we probably, I don't know, interacted with nearly 2,000 people, really, with, again, more school students coming. So that's our impact. And then in addition, when we're on site in Avila Beach, we are on track to welcome 32,000 visitors this year at our small two-room aquarium. And this is interesting. I haven't shared this with you, I don't think, before. We've been taking zip code data for about a year now, voluntary zip code data from our visitors. And it's interesting that in the summer months and spring, we see that most of our visitors come from Tulare, Fresno, and Kern County. But then in the winter and the fall, we see people from our own county, San Luis Obispo, as well as Santa Barbara County, especially northern Santa Barbara County in Santa Maria. So just reminding everyone that we are open to the public 6 days a week in Avila from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and 50 San Juan Street, right in the heart of Avila, $8 general admission, $5 for seniors. I don't know what happened there. I don't know. I'm not going to do anything until the expert comes back. $5 for seniors and military veterans. There we are. And then a new thing we've instituted, which is $3. If you show your EBT card, you can get in. Up to five people can come in for $3, and that's that you're getting some kind of assistance from the state of California. That's a new program that's not on there, but it's called Museums for All, and it's really pretty great. And then lastly, we just always encourage visitors who are here locally, our local residents, to buy a membership for the year. It's $80, and then you can come unlimited visits, and you get discounts on programs, day camps, and the gift shop. Okay, so I won't go into this, but I just have a slide to remind us that in March we presented the results of the feasibility study to the city. We agreed, along with Cal Poly, Central Coast Aquarium, the three entities to continue to move forward based on the results of the feasibility study, which reminded us that no nonprofit aquariums make money, but this one is probably in Morro Bay due to the waterfront site, bay access, Cal Poly collaboration, 800,000 visitors a year, and Highway 1 access, that we're likely to do better than most and cover our costs at 65% rather than the, 65 is the standard, industry standard, but they're expecting we could cover 75%. Key takeaways from the feasibility study was the project doesn't work if it takes on debt, so no more USDA loan, as had been discussed in the past. No offer of land lease support from the city means the project is not feasible. And then if funding is not secured by a combination of private and public funding, grants in that case, then we won't be able to move forward. This council decided unanimously to move forward to phase two fundraising, and that's what I'm here to report on tonight. Phase two is a concept plan details. So that's when we get down to the nitty-gritty of what the architectural and exhibit concept plan will look like. So what will the building look like outside based on requirements from the city planning? What will happen on the inside based on requirements from other types of entities like the water board? What kind of water will we have? How will it come in? How will it go out? And what in particular kinds of exhibits and animals will we house? This costs money, I'm going to just rewind. So as a reminder, the feasibility study was fully funded at $44,000. In 2016, the city of Morro Bay kicked in $10,000. In 2018, with some new leadership at the Central Coast Aquarium, we were able to raise $34,000 in 5 months. 30 of that, and I want to just always talk about this when I have a chance to the residents of Morro Bay, $30,000 came from private citizens, the majority of them, with a handful of businesses. So most people donated about $250 to become a Visionary Circle member, and we had that much interest that in 5 months we were able to raise the $34,000. $4,000 came from the county, which we greatly appreciated, but $30,000 came, for the most part, from citizens in our community, not just in Morro Bay. And that got us to here, which is phase two fundraising. And I might have skipped a slide where I said how much it's going to be. Oh, wait, I want to go back for a second. That's my thunder. So recent fundraising for phase two. I went out this time since we had such an outpouring of support from the community, individual community members. I wanted to expand our opportunities to businesses in Morro Bay who we believe will benefit from having this new attraction. So hoteliers, they all got a personal letter with a request for philanthropic support, and then I made a TBID presentation in September. All Chamber of Commerce members received a letter, similar letter, in an e-blast, and then I was invited to do a Chamber Board presentation also in September. And then I sent out an outreach to all Embarcadero master leaseholders. Because we were looking to raise $32,000 or $38,200 for the concept plan. Those are two bids from two companies that will work in tandem to do a charrette process where we will sit down together, all the stakeholders, and talk about what things we'd like to see in the building, what things are possible, what's our wish list. So that will be managed for us by Tenji Aquarium Systems, located in Carmel, California, which is we have worked with them extensively in Avila, and it's great because their transportation costs are very low because they can just drive here. And RRM Design, which is a known entity here in our county and in this city, they're part of the shell design of the architectural building itself is $19,200. So total is $38,200. Currently, as I stand here today, we have all the money we need. Right. So as of 4 o'clock this afternoon, initially when I sent this in about 3 o'clock, I was needing $1,300, but I actually end up having more than that now because today we received, and I will say almost kind of unsolicited, $6,500. So maybe having the deadline for this quarterly check-in helped my fundraising. So we now have enough money to move forward with the concept plan. So but that's a recent development. But I do want to point out that also these funds for the concept plan do include $7,600 from Cal Poly. So they have now initially kicked in at this phase, and it's their metric for that was figuring out, you know, how much of the building or the facility they may be using. So they're thinking, well, right now they're kind of looking at a 20% amount of that building. So kind of calculated that donation based on that. So now it feels like we have three partners ready to go and design something. So next steps are, based on our conversation this evening, my intended next step is to call the design firms and get them on board and to see when they would be able to, we'll get them working together because they've had an initial email exchange, but we haven't discussed the details of how we will work in tandem, those two entities, and then work with the city and Cal Poly. I've also reached out to other community partners such as Morro Bay National Estuary Program, talked to Lexi Bell today, want to include them and other partners, so we would be I would love it if people could suggest others, you know, people that we do want to have included. Maybe we want to have a state parks presence, certainly other people like that. Cal Poly will probably send several people as well. They've already asked, like, how many people can they have? Maybe city staff would have a better idea of, is there too much, or can you have too many people in the room? I don't know. I would imagine they'd have people coming and going different times, but we want to get started just as quickly as possible because it will take some time just to coordinate schedules and have the charrette. So with that, questions, concerns, or follow-up? Thank you.
Congratulations. Fantastic.
Thank you.
You've raised the money. Excellent. Let me open it up for council questions. Any questions for Ms. Johnson?
I think she answered mine.
Yeah. See no questions. I will.
I'm sorry.
Councilman Davis has one.
Christine, thanks for this and thanks for the good news. In another 90 days, you're going to bring us the concept philanthropic plan update. And do you know what that's going to look like?
So the concept plan, whether we can get it accomplished. So I present to you, you know, the architectural rendering of a new aquarium. That will probably be a stretch in 90 days, but we'll be well on our way of having those meetings scheduled and in the middle of it, at least. Maybe we'll even have had, my assumption is we would have all of those meetings completed and the teams be working on their final projects to present. So that would, we'll bring to you whatever we have in terms of the SHRET process in 90 days, our status update. And then the philanthropic plan would be, well, sketching out what a capital campaign might look like. Because at this phase, this is phase one was feasibility study. We checked in with the city and Cal Poly and CCA, you know, the board at Central Coast Aquarium. Everyone said, let's move forward with feasibility. So then, feasibility looks good, let's move forward. So then we went on to concept plan, where we are now. And tonight, we've reached that milestone. So in the next 90 days, we'll be working really hard to complete the charrette and to have actual documents and more details on what the aquarium will look like, what exhibits will hold, and then the cost concerns, because that's the part we don't know. Once we get pretty close estimates to cost concerns and having the staff participate with us will help us know exactly what things do cost in real time here on the coast, then we'll be able to begin the kind of the design of how we'll raise significant funds. So that would be the philanthropic plan, is really the capital campaign.
May I suggest that several years ago, when the Morro Bay Friends of the Library were involved in fundraising, they developed a pretty good model that you might take a look at.
I might recall that. I might have, yeah, I might know some people who worked on that plan. That was successful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it took a lot of partners. I did.
Great comment. Councilmember Hiller, you had some questions.
Or
a question? Oh, okay. Any other questions? No. Okay, no questions. With that, I'll open up public comment. Any members of the public wishing to comment on item C2, please come forward now. Looking around, seeing none, I will close public comment. Bring it back to council. This is receive and file. I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to meet with your board a couple of weeks ago. It was a good opportunity to interact and reaffirm our commitment to your process. Some very good questions on the part of your board, and it was great to just kind of get on a level playing field with all of your leadership there. Your business plan is outstanding. I really appreciate that. Thanks for including that. And I just, you know, I guess I'm a nerd because I'm into that kind of detail. But it's a guiding document for really success in the future. And with what you've done in really the short period of time, and I'm really surprised. I didn't expect tonight for you to be at your goal. But, man, I'm excited and continue to be very supportive and look forward to the next report. And Councilmember Addis and I are here, obviously, as subcommittee to assist you in any way possible.
Great, thank you. Well, I'm very grateful for the donors, for sure. They really came out. And this time they were about a dozen, mostly business owners in this community. So it really gives us a balance that this project has broad support. So thank you.
Great, thank you. Anything other
else?
Comments or questions? No? Okay.
Okay.
Well, no, I'm just, yeah. Thank you. Please convey, if you see Cal Poly before I do, I'm just really excited that they have put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, and that we are true partners in this. And congratulations on meeting the fundraising goal. I know that feels good on your end. It feels good on our end. So I'm excited to see where this goes. I have full confidence.
Thank you. I do know that Cal Poly wanted a seat at the table, and they realized that without sharing in the expense that really wasn't going to be given to them. So I think, but you know, every step of the way has been, is this project going forward? And, you know, we had a lot of questions even a year and a half ago. So I think that it's well-timed, their you know, contribution at this point. Okay. All right, so you all know where to reach me. So questions or suggestions, let me know. Okay, great. Thank you.
With that, that moves us to item C-4, consideration of the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District, or TBID, Supplemental Annual Report, with the inclusion of vacation rentals in the existing 3% annual assessment and continuation of the existing TBID assessment for fiscal year 2019-2020, adoption of Resolution 83-19 declaring the intent to continue the program and levy assessments for the remainder of the fiscal year, and scheduling both a public meeting to consider levying the assessments as well as a public hearing to consider protests to the levying of the assessments.
And we will turn it over to our city manager and tourism manager. Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mayor, Councilmember Scott Collins, city manager. That was the longest subject title ever for a staff report. My apologies. But very necessary, according to our city attorney. We pay him by the word, just so you know. So ultimately, what we're seeking here is council support to adopt Resolution 8319, which I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's basically the supplemental to the annual report, because we have received direction from this council to add vacation rentals into the T-bid, and in order to do that, we need to do a supplemental to the fiscal year annual report that you adopted back in May for this current fiscal year. Also, we need to schedule a public meeting to consider levying the assessment, as well as a public hearing to consider protest the levying of the assessment. So we will be meeting on this item for about 15 more meetings before we can adopt it, according to the city attorney. Sorry. We are also asking city council to approve moving $10,000 from the accumulation fund to the T-bid for fiscal year 19-20 to supplant some visiting journalist budgets, as well as the events grants that we weren't able to fulfill through the current fiscal year. And then lastly, that we ask council to honor the vacation rental contracts that we put in place or executed prior to the vacation rentals being added, but that we limit that through June 30th of 2020. That way, you know, folks won't be making arrangements 3 years down the road and we still won't be able to collect on the TBID assessment at that point. So having some end date seems like the right thing to do, and that's the logical point, because the next fiscal year is the next day. So I won't bore you with all the details, other than to say, you know, that we did look at what we anticipate as far as revenues by adding vacation rentals, and apologies for the slide being a little small, but ultimately we anticipate that moving forward on a go-forward basis in a regular year, you know, that we will receive over $120,000 or more from vacation rentals, actually more than that figure. But because we're honoring the contracts mid-year, and because there's a lot of work to get everybody up and running, we don't anticipate even getting half of that amount. In fact, we figured maybe a quarter of that amount in the time. So we're being more conservative in budgeting, that we probably receive about $40,000 in additional revenue by adding vacation rentals mid-year, at least the first year. And we provide some, and this was reviewed and recommended by the T-bid board as well, that we apply kind of a mixture of funds into the digital media, the digital assets, the onboarding platforms, and visiting journalists. Mostly, it's really to help get transition the work that we do to support vacation rentals, so that we're honoring the commitment that, you know, we're all in this together, and that folks get the same benefit for what they pay into the bid. So this really helps just to onboard all the VRs. So the first 6 months of their being part of this team will really be helping to transition. And then moving into next year, we'll really be able to benefit from their added revenue. The $10,000 accumulation transfer was, again, reviewed by the TBID board and recommended. This would put $6,000 more into the visitor journalist budget, and then $4,000 towards some of the grants we weren't able to award. And, again, the vacation rental contracts, we think it's important to have an end date on how far out you go honoring that. City Attorney, did you want to talk about the public meeting and the public hearing process real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
So according to the 1989 law, the one that we're currently have our tourism business improvement district law instituted under, we're going to need to add these vacation rentals, have a public meeting where folks can talk about the inclusion. It would just be an agendized item where folks can discuss and provide comment. It's not a public hearing. And then there needs to be a public hearing where we actually have the ability for folks to lodge at that meeting or prior to it a written protest to the vacation rentals being added to the T-bid. So to be clear, there'll be two further agenda items. One, according to the government code, is simply a public meeting where there's discussion
The second one is the actual public hearing where the protests have a deadline to be turned in by either at that meeting or prior to it to the city clerk.
And those meetings are the public meeting for input is the 22nd, next meeting, and then the public hearing to, you know, review the protests would be the 12th of November. And then based on the timelines, we would be launching in early January or early next year, launching the T-bid with vacation rentals added and assessed 3%.
And to provide the conclusion of the process, if at the public hearing there is not received a majority protest vote from the percentage of businesses that will be paying into the T-bid, then that night the council could adopt the first reading, or they could introduce for first reading the ordinance, and then we'd have to do a second reading, and then it would be effective 30 days later, which would be about mid-January.
Any questions?
So Councilmember Heller.
When this was before the council, before I believe we talked about possible infrastructure improvements and using the funds for that, you were going to bring some examples back.
Right.
Do you have any like that you can talk to us about?
We haven't had time to explore that, to be honest. We had some discussions internally about whether we use T-bid as the platform to have that, or if we look at different bid structures. And so we've set up some discussions with the downtown SLO bid president and other entities like that to understand if you want to focus maybe on a more of a place-based bid to do improvements, because we don't have a lot of examples other than the Pismo example for using the T-bid platform to do infrastructure improvements. So I think the council direction was sort of to come up with some of the ideas that could be funded and then look at the various platforms we could use to address some of those infrastructure needs. We just haven't had time to get to those yet.
Do you know what it was they did in Pismo in general terms?
Yeah, I mean, they basically added another, they went from 1% assessment to 2, and then they mixed all that together for continued support of marketing, and then they had 2 very specific projects. I don't remember the 2 of them, but they were called out in sort of the annual report and said this is what we're going to apply a portion of these funds for. The city attorney sort of let us know that whenever you do that, you take on the burden of proof that that those infrastructure projects will have a direct impact on the overnight stays, because that's what the T-bid is for, is here to generate overnight stays. So if the infrastructure is going to do that, you have to be able to definitively prove that in court if you're challenged. So we're sort of looking at that as an option, or maybe doing a standalone bid in the Embarcadero downtown as an opportunity to directly tie those benefits, those infrastructure benefits, to those businesses, which is an easier thing to prove, I think. So we want to bring that back to, we just haven't had time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then the other question I had was, in reading this, the boundaries for this district are this parking and business improvement area is the entire city. Is that correct?
Correct.
Is that normal to include the entire city?
Because this is a business improvement district that is including specific business types, which to date have been hotels, and the definition has expressly excluded RVs and VRs, the city's entire boundaries could potentially have, a hotel. So it's just been the whole city's boundaries. What this action is proposing to do is, after we've gone through all the legal processes, essentially we're going to take out of the local code the exception of vacation rentals as from the definition of hotel, which otherwise they would meet. But yes, for an improvement district of this nature and for a city of this size and in the context of the Morro Bay, absolutely to have the full boundaries of the city just be the improvement district makes sense, especially okay. Since it's for tourism.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions?
Oh, yeah, I just have a couple. Yes. Just out of curiosity, how do you determine 50% plus one of the vacation rental owners when we have a lot of property managers? Can they vote for the property owner, or is it
50% plus one of the 250 legal vacation rental licensees in the city. I'm just curious.
Yeah, the protest is the entire, it's everything included, so the hotels and VRs. So it's 50% of the income generated. So if every single vacation rental property owner or owner protested, it wouldn't affect the outcome of the protest. They would have to have a significant number of hotels that also would protest that, because it's the total amount of revenue
generated.
I
see. So it is not just the vacation rental.
It's everybody, because it's a supplemental. It includes those who are already part of the assessment.
I see. Okay. Well, that helps to clarify that.
Yeah.
And what you're asking for tonight is really essentially approval of the formal process that we've already approved the decision to include them.
That's right.
Am I understanding?
It's the annual report that you're approving, the supplemental annual report, and that's it. The specifics of those are, there's six criterion that you have to look into, and primarily it's, you know, what is this going to be? What are the boundaries? Who's included? What are your goals and objectives? What's the budget? Are all the monies going to be used for this, et cetera? There's six very distinct things called out. So that's what you review annually. This is just a repeat of that, but with the new monies injected into it, and the new assessees are included in it.
Okay. And then my last question. We had an email from Sean Green suggesting that this was an opportunity for us to do something about auditing, a formal audit of the T-bid and the monies paid into it. Is that a separate issue, or is this something that we could address? And if we wanted to address that, how would we address that issue?
Mr. Green brought up a good point. It was in relation to the host compliance, which we're onboarding now, which will audit, help us audit TOT on the vacation rental side, but their platform is not looking at hotels. I think Mr. Green was looking at, since we're doing this, isn't this an opportunity to now look at auditing TOT from hotels? And I'm sure there are other ways of doing that. Right now, we don't have the staff capacity to do significant auditing, but I definitely know that's something that other cities do.
Mm-hmm. But is that something we could use TBID monies for?
No,
it would be general fund money.
Yes, but you could, just like with host compliance, and we're assessing a fee back on the VR owners. They're paying for that compliance.
So if we wanted to pursue that, mm-hmm. it would be by adding a future agenda item.
Correct.
Okay. And is it true that it's just a one-page report that they are required to fill in regularly on the T-bid monies paid? That was what Mr. Green suggested.
It's a fairly simple form of how many, how much revenue they received and what tax they paid. It's very simple and basic.
And we don't do any cross-checking against their whatever they report for.
No, it's self-reported right now.
Self-reported. Okay. All right.
The host compliance, software that we're going with will allow us to do some auditing. When I mentioned that to our finance director, she thought that was a great idea.
On the vacation rentals.
Correct.
Only.
Yeah, on the vacation rental portion.
All right. All right. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you. Any questions? No. Okay. With that, I'll open up public comment for item C4. Any members of the public wishing to come forward now, please do so. Looking around, seeing none, I will close public comment, bring it back to staff and entertain to council and entertain a motion.
I would move that we adopt Resolution 83-19, approving a supplemental fiscal year 2019-20 annual report for expenditure funds to be derived from the addition of vacation rentals, and declaring the intent to continue the program and levy assessments for the remainder of fiscal year 2019-20, and schedule both a public meeting to consider levying the assessments as well as a public hearing to consider protest to the levying of the assessments, and approve moving $10,000 from the accumulation fund to the TBID FY 2019-20 budget for visiting journalists and grants expenses, and honor vacation rental contracts put into place prior to VRs being added to the TBID for stays in Morro Bay through June 30th, 2020, with all stays thereafter being assessed a 3% TBID assessment regardless of contract execution date.
Is there a second?
Second.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Davis for the staff recommendation, second by Councilmember Addis. Any further discussion?
I have another question
yes.
that just came to mind here. So item two is council to approve moving $10,000 from the accumulation fund to TBID. So is that from the general fund accumulation, or where is that? What accumulation fund is that?
It's the TBID accumulation fund. This drawdown of that would still be in compliance with the recently adopted minimum that council wanted for both, you know, all the funds, really, but they specifically called out a percentage. I think it's around 25% that you want to maintain. So drawing it down, it would not affect that council policy.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, roll call vote.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
No.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-1.
Thank you. That takes us to agenda item C-5. This is the recommendation regarding the review of the City Park Transit Hub Improvement Study. And I will turn it over to Mr. Leivig for his presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council. Ms. Burlingame was unable to make it tonight, so I'll do my best to channel her work effort on this project. So tonight we're asking for the City Council to select the existing site option for vehicle pull-in and passenger shelter areas and direct staff to pursue transportation grants to fully fund the improvements. First off, I want to thank Patricia and Steve from Morro Bay Art Association and Art in the Park for working with staff and helping us to achieve a plan that fits the needs of the community and the transit service that's provided. This project, the study was funded from a grant through the Rural Transit Fund for $30,000, and has no general fund impact. The estimates for the improvements are almost $383,000, and they're proposed to be funded through a series of applications for grants through the transit funding mechanisms, either Rural Transit Fund, State of Good Repair, and the city's local transportation funds, which are intended for, and I don't want Siri helping me, intended for use of improvements of transit and transit-related facilities. The existing bus stop or transit shelter has been at its current location since, I believe, the structure was completed in the early 80s. And we're looking to make some improvements there. We also reviewed the existing services, reviewed the deficiencies at the improvements, and then we evaluated several potential sites around that city park area. It became clear that the existing location was that best location because it had the lowest impact to other park users. Morro Bay Boulevard was problematic because it's also used as a bus stop. Morro Bay Boulevard is one of our arterial streets, and we didn't really want to stop traffic frequently on Morro Bay Boulevard because, as we all know, that when a bus stop, school bus is unloading and loading passengers, everybody comes to a stop there, and that would be better served on that Harbor Street, which is a less trafficked street. The consultant that did the report looked at deficiencies and the improvements we're proposing will improve the passenger loading area, especially as it relates to ADA, and have better amenities for passenger waiting. It also increased the visibility of the transit stop for both the passengers and the transit operators. It also will accommodate future improvements, so automated ticketing that may be coming in the future, the ability to accommodate charging stations for when the fleet converts to electric buses. One thing that likely cannot accommodate at this time is moving the transit office and the operator break area, and we'll continue to use the transit facilities in the community center for that. And we have our schedule for our deviated fixed route that accommodates that service. So what we're looking for is the transit improvements are, again, to increase the curb space, the length along the street for vehicle pull in and pull out, and that will include a concrete pad for the buses to park on, so we won't see that degradation in the asphalt surface. We'll have a wider sidewalk that'll accommodate the wheelchair loading and unloading. Replacing the passenger shelter, increased waiting areas and benches, new bike racks and a bike tool station, accommodate future real-time bus information display that includes 110-volt power internet connection for that, that data to be transmitted, future ticket vending machine for the RTA service, and then the future accommodation for, as I said, the future electric charging. That concludes my brief staff report, and happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Rob.
And thank Janine for her work on this. We really appreciate that. And our thanks to Morro Bay Art Association and Art in the Park for collaborating and coming up with a plan. I'll open it up for any questions from council.
Just out of curiosity, who is going to be doing the design of it, and will we see a design of the new bus shelter?
Yes, to proceed forward with the actual design, we'll need to secure that grant funding first. Likely the shelter will be a, as typical shelters are, a prefabricated shelter with plexiglass or clear walls so that nobody can stay hidden in there very easily. So the drivers can see them, they can see the drivers.
Okay. And the likelihood of getting this funding?
We've working with SLOCOG and very likely of getting the funding. It will likely take two grant cycles to accumulate the funding for the project.
Right, but it depends on outside funding.
It does depend on outside funding. We're not proposing any city general funds for this improvements.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Yes, Councilmember Davis.
Rob, the 110 volt power and internet connection, can you describe what the internet connection is going to look like?
That's connectivity for the displays for when we add them for the bus locations and how long it's going to be for that next bus. It's really not a public internet connection, as I understand it is currently proposed.
Okay, thanks. And I'd like to add that RTA is signing a contract to provide internet service on all of their buses for the passengers.
Good.
I just want to point out one deficiency in the report. On the table that shows bus trips, there's a we copied this out of the report, and there's a typo in that the San Luis Coastal. There are no students on Saturday and Sundays, so that distribution is wrong, but it's a fairly minor amount of the total trips.
Thank you for that. Any further questions? Not, I will open it up for public comment on item C-5. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Almost. Welcome, Linda.
More a question than a comment. Is there any form of security at these bus stops?
Is that your comment?
We'll go ahead. Question.
Okay, thank you.
We'll
make it. We'll get that for you. Okay. Great. Any other members of the public wishing to come forward? Not. I will close public comment. Mr. Leivick, security?
No. No security at the bus station, other than regular police patrols that go by there, because it is a popular location to hang out at.
Yeah. And that's pretty standard for most cities.
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Okay. With that, I will entertain a motion.
I move to accept the Morro Bay City Park Transit Hub Improvement Study and select the existing site option for vehicle pull-in, pull-out, and passenger shelter area improvements, and direct staff to pursue transportation grants to fully fund the improvements.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Davis for the staff recommendation, second by Councilmember McPherson. Any further discussion?
I just want to say that I'm really grateful that we were able to work out the differences with the Morro Bay Art Association and the Art in the Park, because that's such a fabulous event that I'm just grateful that we could come to a resolution on it. So thank you to everybody involved.
Indeed. Echo.
I want to echo that as well. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Okay, roll call vote.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding.
And yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. That brings us to item D, Council Declaration of Future Agenda Items. Anything to bring up?
I would like a future agenda items. Do you do this through a motion, or how do you do this? You just propose it?
You just propose it, and you need to have a majority support. Okay. Just two other people to support.
So I'd like to propose as a future agenda item for the record that staff come back to council with a list of potential actions that will reduce general fund expenses.
To reduce... did you say general fund expenses? I was just
yes.
trying to write down exactly
yeah,
what you said.
You know, it might be worded a little better, a little differently, but as you know, we've talked a lot about the structural deficit mm-hmm. with the general fund, and at this point we're pursuing potentially increasing taxes and so forth, but I'd like to see what options are available to the city to reduce our expenses as a way of eliminating the structural deficit.
Everybody clear on the request, and I'll just look for any support. Seeing none.
For the record, can that be put in the record that I made that suggestion as a future agenda item?
Sure.
Okay. And I didn't get a second or any support.
Yeah, and I just want to add, I believe that we have already made significant reductions in expenditures, and we may very well at some future point have to do exactly that, but I'm not in favor of doing it right now at this point.
Well, my idea was to talk about what those might be, not
well,
that we would do
I, no,
them.
No, 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 and I think we may very well, as I say, have to do that, and... when it's time, I would support that, but I don't think the time is now. That's all.
I would just add, I feel like we've had a lot of conversation already about reduction, and we've heard a number of things that have been done to reduce, and it's time to increase revenues. And I would agree, at some point we may have to have more reduction, but I think we need to keep our eye on the prize, and our eye on the prize is to increase our economic viability, not have the race to the bottom. And so if we're trying to get things into the public record of our thinking about this, then, you know, my view on this is I'm not interested at this point in time on a race to the bottom by continuing to cut. And I heard your comments last time about, you know, people may want to play tennis, but you don't necessarily want to pay for it. I'm interested in raising revenues so that we can afford the things that make living in Morro Bay a great place. And I don't think continuing to cut on the city side is going to do that. So that's why I'm not interested at this moment in time in hearing a list of options. I'd rather keep our energy on the list of options to increase revenues.
Okay. I guess my point, and I don't want to belabor this too much, but my point is I think if we want to pass a tax increase, the best strategy is to be talking about what expenses we might be able to cut concurrently. That's where I'm coming from. Do you understand? And,
I do, and I appreciate that, but I'd like to hear from the consultant on the polling, and I'd like to not assume that we're pollsters we're somehow smarter than the pollsters.
We're
discussing
it like it's an agenda item, and we'll move beyond. So it did not get support. And I appreciate the comments, and I think they're all valid. Any other future agenda items? No? If not, I better get my notes here. I will adjourn the meeting. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019 at 5:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall located at 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. Thank you and good evening. Thank you.